Good morning. I'd like to welcome everybody to the November 6th, 2017 meeting of Chelan Public Utility District. This morning we'll meet in a study and business session, and this afternoon we'll have a full agenda going into this evening. Again, I'd like to welcome everybody here. All the commissioners and all the regular staff are here, and it appears that we have a good representation of staff, but maybe not too much from the public this morning. I'd like to remind everybody that this meeting is being recorded, and so if there's any testimony to be made before the commission, we usually have a microphone, a remote microphone up here, and that you come to the table and give us your name and address for the record, since we are being recorded, and then present whatever it is you will be presenting. At this time, before we get to the approval agenda, we always start our meetings with a... Oh, I didn't say it. I don't think I did. Please check your cell phones and make sure they're on silent or turned off mode. It helps not having that disruption during the meeting. But before we start with the approval agenda, we always start with a Pledge of Allegiance and a Safety Minute. This morning it will be brought to us by Cheryl Hobson.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. My name is Cheryl Hobson. I'm with Customer Utilities. I'm the maintenance planner in that department for wastewater, wastewater distribution substation group. Today I'm given the safety minute on safe winter walking. I don't know about any of the rest of you, but when I woke up on Sunday, even though they said it was going to snow, I was still a little bit surprised. I didn't know where my shovel was. I didn't know where my boots were. I didn't know where any of my stuff was. So I was out there scraping ice with like my credit card, stuff like that. So I wasn't super prepared. And every year we see falls in the safety minutes. We've got accident reports. People are slipping, throwing backs out and all kinds of stuff. So I thought it was kind of appropriate to do it this time of year because it always catches us off guard. So the number one thing I think that we need to think about is safe footing. Every year, I worked out at Holly Street for 20 years, and every year I would fall at some point or another. A lot of times it was in the morning just getting out of my car. Sometimes it was walking across the parking lot. I was in a big hurry, and I would slip and I would fall. And as I'm getting older, it hurts a lot more when I fall. So think about our footing. Getting in and out of our cars is a big one. The stairs, if everybody's noticed, the parking lot has been... the nice yellow paths have been repainted, and Dave kind of pointed this out to me as I'm walking across. That yellow paint's kind of slick. So as things get wet and snow starts to fall, that yellow strip can be a little bit slick. Mm-hmm. So be careful of your footing. Wear your boots. This is especially for women, men too, but wear your boots and bring your nice shoes to work with you in a bag. Heels are terrible out there. The warehouse, actually, I looked into it, has boots. Boot chains and the old kind of rubber, the spikes that go on your boots. And I went out there this morning and I got a pair of the chains and I put them just on my regular pair of boots. Wow. They're really easy to get on and off, super rugged. They also have the spikes, but I think they get a little bit gummed up and the spikes fall out and you don't realize the spike came out until you're laying on the ground looking at your shoe, wondering how you fell. So these are really good, really good for your shoes. And mainly I would just say slow down. We're all in a hurry. We've all got things to do, but I think probably the safest thing we can do is just slow down and think about our footing as we're walking across the parking lot in the morning. So thank you.
Thank you. Would you mind passing that boot around? I really want to see how that's attached.
I'm sorry. It's my dirty shoe.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Do I need to turn this off?
All right.
So you pop it on the toe first.
Yeah, you just wrap it on the toe.
And then just... stretch it up over the heel, huh?
I did it without it on my foot. It was a little harder because I was fighting the boot, but I didn't have any leverage. But if you just wrap it around the toe, and then you grab on the heel. There's a
right
handle,
there. Yep.
And you just yank that thing up, and then and it just really snugged in there quite good. So.
Cool.
So I'm at Costco too. I noticed I bought a pair of boots that are a little more aggressive than Costco. That's what we carry in the warehouse.
So do you get banned from the lobby with these on?
You don't want them in the lobby.
That is interesting. Yeah. I'd never
need the phone.
No.
All right. Well, thank
you. He needs some for his driveway.
I do. It did go down backwards last year.
I'm just sorry to put your issues.
It was a great example.
It was a good example. Thank you very much. Okay, item two on our agenda is the approval of the agenda. This is that moment in time when any item on the regular agenda can be moved to the consent agenda or vice versa. And if any member of the audience wishes to speak to add anything to the agenda or commissioners wish to add anything, can be brought up for consideration at this time. No guarantees, but if items come up, we will consider them as a commission. All of that being said, staff has recommended to us that we move resolutions 10, 11, 15, and 16 to the consent agenda. Is there any disagreement on any part of the commission doing that?
Could you repeat those? 10, 11?
10, 11, 15, and 16.
And I was listening. I'm just slow. Thank you.
Not a problem. If there's no disagreement with that, we will move items 10, 11, 15, and 16 to the consent agenda. And hearing no other input or comments on the approval agenda, the agenda will stand approved as amended. Item three, quarterly district performance plan update.
So you may recall the way that we do this is by exception. So things that have changed from the last quarter will be reported on here. And with that, we've got folks teed up to just go through the items. And I believe John Stoll will be first up today.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. You'll see me up here quite a bit. A lot of mine are just marking things complete since we've gone to a new metric system of targeting blue as a complete item. So on page one, item one, D, one, and two under the customer experience, we went through the CIS effort to identify potential enhancements. So that was completed in June. And we also work to provide a better solutions for our high-density load customers to provide metering options. So that was complete in May as well.
Good morning. I'm Allison Brodeen. I'm here on behalf of Lorna Klemanski to provide status updates on the changes for the HR, Safety, and Labor Group. I would like to direct you to item I-3A on page 2. That was to develop and implement a plan for utility-focused educational programs. That was actually completed in Q1, and the item should have been reported in the last reporting cycle.
Okay. John Stoley and I have the next one. That is Objective 1, 5, A, B, and C, and those reference the effort around the regional water wastewater study where we worked with the cities and completed an outreach plan back in March. We developed a scope and a request for proposal working with the city of Leavenworth in March as well, and then selected a vendor to work with the regional group in June. So those are complete.
Yeah, jump in.
You bet.
Thanks. I just want to say, Allison, it's nice to see you. We haven't seen you up here for a while. You were interim human resources manager for a while, yeah. So we saw more of you then. Anyway, thank you.
Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. We're now on page 3, and I've got a couple items here. Objective 2E and F, these are metrics that are reported on by our reliability coordinator on plan, transmission, and generation outages. And we started off the year. They provide these numbers for us based on our outage scheduling, and they discontinued that metric. They did not see a need to continue reporting on that. We're exceeding our goals for the first 2 months of the year, and so we have colored this one blue as a discontinued metric at this point in time. Then next one, objective 2I3. This is initiate disassembly of the second large unit.
Which page?
What page?
So it's on page 4.
Perfect.
Right toward the middle of the page. Initiate disassembly of the second large unit by December 31st. And this one is going to slip. You might recall we're doing work on the bridge cranes between the first and second units, and the bridge crane work is actually going to go longer than we anticipated by a couple of months. We're finding all kinds of things with the bridge crane. Anytime you take a piece of equipment off like that and sandblast it, we've done a very thorough inspection, and so there's going to be more repairs needed. And you'll also expect to see a presentation at the next board meeting on the bridge crane work on a status update there.
I have to comment, that's an incredibly colorful page.
Yes, it is. the next one is objective 2L. We're still on the same page down at the bottom. 2L2. This one is complete condition assessments for, this is our major overhaul O&M work at the hydros. So we have 5 condition assessments we're planning on getting done this year. All the field work will be completed on all those units. We have 2 units that will slip into the first part of next year, and it's simply the documentation report that will be delivered at the first part of next year.
John Stoll again. I have the next one. We're on page 5, and this is under objective 2N1. Asset management, we changed our distribution outage reporting to reflect IEEE standards, which it basically pulls out major events and more focuses on non-major event things such as equipment failures, things of that nature. So that was completed in March.
What is IEEE?
Institute of Edison Electrical
Engineer.
That was Steve.
You, yeah, you know, it's funny.
Chad's over there laughing. He knows what it is.
Yeah. I'm just not trying to be a smart mouth. It's just acronyms. Specific language.
We'll be sure to spell that one out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Continuing on down under Q on the same page under the Advanced Intelligent Grid, these two are marked complete. The first one was to update the business case, and we presented that back in April to the steering committee. And then in addition, we've been working through the CIS project, the customer information system, as we brought forward, and we've selected a technology and a path forward that actually includes a meter data management solution. So that's informative as we move forward into our business planning. And those are complete. So now we're on page 6. Objective 2S. This is the third-party attachment program and policies. So item 1, we've looked at the APPA draft model contract, and that's what we're utilizing, and that was completed back in June. And then in September, we developed the 3-year strategy as we look at our pole attachment program and put it all together in a strategy to move forward. So that's been developed. That's complete. And moving on down to page 9. This is under objective 3K1, and that's under the Beshaston Wastewater Capital Improvements. Early in the year, we put forward a grant loan application, a package, and submitted it to Ecology. So that was completed first of the year. So now we're on page 10, and Steve, I think you have this one.
I do. This is the Columbia River Treaty item, and we've changed this from yellow to red because we have not hit the goal, which was to initiate negotiations and get a termination notice out. Some good news, a new State Department lead negotiator has been identified. That person is, as I said, that they will be coming out to the region soon, maybe even as early as next week. to have discussions with various parties. We've expressed concern about the use of the collaborative modeling working group, and we're hopeful, but at least from what we've heard so far, that they may share that concern. We've expressed concern about the need for a termination notice to be issued. We've got some, at least some initial feedback and an understanding that that's the only way to get leverage in this discussion. Feeling hopeful that the change in the negotiator may actually lead to some changes in the position of the State Department, but we'll know more over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Good morning. Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer. On page 11 is our next item, 4L, 3 and 4. These are the next two steps in our kind of year-long effort with the board to refresh our district financial policies, business line financial policies. The next concurrent steps we have is to do the next level into long-term rate guidance, as well as the next level of detail into debt guidance. So on three, you see that's yellow because our team lead, Mark O'Brien, has taken the CIS project manager position within the district. So we expect in the transition that we'll go a little bit slower on this item. So it's a yellow, although we do have a new lead, Lindsay Mons, identified. And so she'll get going on it also. So you will see something starting that off in the next few meetings. And then on our next level of debt guidance, Debbie Litchfield is the lead on that. And you'll see us back in the next couple meetings to talk some more about debt philosophies.
Okay, I'm going to move on to page 12, talk about items Q and items V. So on the develop the new Mid-Sea agreement, our intent was to get an agreement with the three PUDs on that, and we did get Douglas to make a decision about joining or not joining, and they made the decision to not continue with hourly coordination, so that was completed. And because items 3 and 4, the intent was to develop a new agreement with the three of them, we went from yellow to red, and we are currently involved in independent design for hourly coordination. And moving down to item V, there is a couple of changes I'd like to make. Items 1 and 3, I would like to turn those to blue, so I'll make the correction of making those to blue. And then we started developing the district's position related to electric vehicles and what we can, what our stance will be. We just started that work. We're going to be complete by Q4. Okay.
John Stoll again. We're now on page 14 into the metrics and targets. So on 5 C and D, these went from a caution back into a green where our distribution O&M cost per normalized kilowatt hour is now under the target. It is 3.18 cents, as well as the fully loaded O&M or cost per normalized, and that's now at 6.03 cents per kilowatt hour.
Allison Brodeen, we had a goal on page 15. Under item 10 on that page, the first number 10 that's on there, to complete our business continuity planning. That item was actually completed in April and should have been marked so in quarter two.
And then just a few lines down below that, J2, still on page 15. Our business intelligence roadmap on executing on that, also as part of Mark O'Brien's transition to his new position, we just anticipate executing on our roadmap a little slower, but we are still moving forward, and the team is rallying to continue to move forward. And in fact, we are expecting to complete our two subject areas, which are kind of like pilots on doing additional reporting capabilities, which is number 3, and that's turned from yellow to green. And Scott Taylor is leading that effort to complete our second one. So we are back on track.
Okay. Allison Brodeen again. Page 16, item 5, L4 is the item. It's under collective bargaining agreements, gaining authority to begin negotiations. That work has begun in quarter three.
I'm sorry, what page is that on?
Page 16. Top of page 16, second item.
Oh, there.
Mm-hmm. And then moving on to Initiative 1433, which is the minimum wage, new minimum wage and paid sick leave law. The goal there was to develop a policy and contract language in, looks like Q2 or 3. That rule development has been slow to materialize. The Department of Labor and Industries didn't actually release their administrative rules until October of 2017. And enforcement rules will not be released until December of 2017. So we have changed that goal, received a variance to move that to Q4. That work has begun.
Commissioners, on the top of page 17, item Q2 and 3, the microwave system and the trunk radio system, we did place those in a yellow status as caution. We had a lot of cumulative changes. We did choose to procure this from the NASPO state contract. And as part of that, we had the changes and the opportunity with the scope of work and extended contract negotiations and contract review that produced benefit, but it did delay the schedule slightly.
And Allison Brodeen again, page 17, item S1, recognition program improvements, conduct a follow-up survey on employee recognition. That item was completed in Q3 on schedule. And then moving to page 19, objective 6, item A6, develop a 2018 plan for introduction of the human performance culture of excellence into other business units. That did start in, or to start in 2013 and complete by the end of Q4. That work has begun. Plans are in place to begin on-ramping customer utilities and fiber and telecom by the end of this year. Then on the last page, I have two more things. On page 21, item E, perform targeted hiring based on prioritized needs. Make job offers to 90% of all of the new positions that were approved to fill before October 1st. I'm pleased to say that we met that goal, and that was completed in Q3. And then the last item on here is review benefits programs, analyze the feasibility study results. This is item F2. And work collaboratively with the Benefits Advisory Committee to develop a plan in Q3. That item has changed. Is this the right one? Yes, it is. Has changed from red to green in Q3. And, oh, no. Excuse me. That's a different note. Apologize. We completed this work in Q3. I had my notes reversed. And there is actually one more item I do need to report. And that would be on page 22. Under safety metrics, the lost time incident rate, that's the one that where the item was changed from red to green in Q3, and there's been a steady improvement in that metric. I think that's it.
Thank you.
So you might notice at the bottom here that of our total of 229 items tracked, 84% are on track, and with the others we've discussed here.
That's good. Thank you. Good report. So, item 4, quarterly resources, energy resources update.
And Greg Carrington is here.
And Janet's going to be joining me and Andrew. There's a lack of chair, so Andrew will come up at the end and do the energy efficiency part of this. So first off, this is the quarterly update. It's for your information, and no action is required today. I'd like to acknowledge Sarah, who has refreshed the look of this. The information this quarter is very similar to last quarter, so we're going to be going through this fairly quickly, but you'll notice that it's been brightened up a little bit. So. Again, we're going to do the portfolio overview, talk about operations, give you a market update where we stand on our overall wholesale position, and then Andrew's going to give you an update, primarily talking about some of the action items that are going to be required by the end of the year. Bottom line is that our net wholesale is about $2.7 million higher than budget and has increased by about $400,000 since last quarterly update. One of the main reasons associated with that is our specified source sales, and that's our carbon-free energy that's flowing down into California by our purchasers. And Andrew will give you an update on energy efficiency. This graph is very similar. There's minor changes associated with that. Some of the positions that we had in the unhedged portions have changed over time, but you can see that we're hedged up tight, which is what we like to do, and with the exception probably in the 5 years out, we still have some space to go out there and sell a little bit more in 5 years out.
Greg, on today's, on the current market, the 55 megawatts is the Canadian entitlement.
Yeah.
Market value?
Can you do the calculation real quick? So let's assume $25 a megawatt hour times 55 times 8760.
Yeah, but we should be higher than 25 because it's got all that capacity associated. Can we get back to you on that one?
You bet.
I was just doing the energy component.
Okay.
I just can't do that math in my head.
I'm glad to have questions that you don't anticipate sometimes.
25 times 55 times 8760.
55 times what?
8760.
8760 is,
that's just energy.
120,450.
Yeah, that's more than that.
You got some zero, some decimal points somewhere.
Yeah, there's a decimal missing.
25 times
55 times 8760.
87 dot.
No, not 8760.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
There's the decimal.
Okay.
Never mind.
All right. This slice, we haven't executed any new slice sales. So, Janet?
Thanks, Greg. So, in the beginning of the year, we were quite a bit higher flows. And as you can see, the last 4 months, we've been below average on flows on the Columbia River. But kind of looking out to this next water year, we're looking right at 100% of normal.
It shouldn't surprise you because the water year starts on October 1st, so we're 100% of normal right now. Just saying.
Looking at the weather forecast for the next 3 months, November, December, and January, we have kind of the white here in the precip, which means equal chances of above or below, and also white for the temperatures, so above or equal chances for above or below normal temps. The Canadians are kind of forecasting the same thing. This is shifted 1 month earlier than the last one, but kind of white in this area, white over here, so still kind of close to average temps and precip. Take a look at Henry Hub natural gas contracts. Last time we were here, natural gas was 2.93. No, it's $2.95 per MMBTU. So
huge change.
Yeah. It looks like it's this whole window span of time is 2017. But if you look at 2017, it's this yellow box here. So kind of looking relative to the last 10, 15 years, not much volatility this year. This graph is just showing the Mid-Sea flat annual electricity prices at budget. We were $22.49 for 2017, and now we're $22.05, so we're down 44 cents since budget. And if kind of looking forward to 2018, just about straight across, so around 22.51.
Right, so one thing I did want to point out is this is mid-sea flat, so it's average across the day. It doesn't take into account the heavy and light load variation that occurs. And then the one thing that we are seeing in California is as there's the duck curve, the famous duck curve that everybody talks about at every conference, there's going to be some kind of super peak products that will be developing over time. And as those prices change, you would expect to see higher volatility in when the evening ramp up occurs, and the prices of energy will be going up. So even though this is flat, I think in the future we may want to consider taking a look at what happens to some of the super peak products and the value associated with those. Okay.
And this is just kind of showing the black line is as of this quarterly update in the solid blue. We were quite a bit higher in August and September, and then it's tracking just really close, closely compared to last quarter when we came. Kind of in summary, we have the 2017 net wholesale revenue and other energy-related revenue.
And hopefully that cricket sound wasn't associated with our net wholesale position. It's not the sleepy or anything like that. This is good news, isn't it?
Yeah. So, good news, we are now $2.7 million higher than budget and $400,000 higher than last quarter.
And one of the good things is, Kelly will be talking about it, is the Alcoa piece of this, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, this Alcoa line is actually about $1 million higher than last quarter.
If you mind going back to one slide, I was trying to get this thing.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And that's in here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is in there. Yep, slide 14.
Okay. And then this is just this chart is just showing how it moves over time. So these first years, 27. Through 2021, as Greg had mentioned, we're hedged very tight, close to our expected surplus, and so not much movement with any changes in price. The black line is our current, and then this purple line, which you can hardly see just because it's way underneath the black line, was last quarter. Moving on to the Lakeland lake level chart. The pale blue is our kind of our annual normal operating range. And as you can see, since we just started this operating year, we're, this green line is right kind of smack in the middle of our expected operating range. We have both turbines generating full out, so we'll be kind of drafting towards that target curve this fall and winter. On to market information. Over on the left-hand third, natural gas, the supply is abundant, so we're expecting prices to stay pretty low. Kind of just commercial and residential consumption is flat. Kind of switching to the center of the screen. The energy imbalance market grows with Portland General Electric entrance. So they joined on October 1st. And then PowerX had an announcement that they were going to join in targeting April 2018. So they're taking 8 of their hydroelectric facilities and starting to participate in that energy imbalance market with them. And over on the right-hand side of the screen, the Department of Energy is directing FERC to consider a plan to compensate some of the generators. And it would kind of target the coal and nuclear. So there is quite a bit of opposition to that. So not sure how that's going to play out.
Now, I just mentioned we participated with both Large Public Power Council and the American Public Power Association in comments on this too. Oppose the position that DOE took with the FERC, stating that the process, first of all, the process is way outside the bounds of a normal process, timeframes for comment, opportunities for people to engage. But second, just the idea of targeting specific resources as eligible for subsidies struck us as wrong, that the process should be, if there are issues that need to be addressed, they should be focused on the attributes of resources. So, for example, if there's something that's needed on the power system in order to make sure you maintain reliability, whether it's flexible capacity or other types of inertia, those kinds of things, then you should focus on that as opposed to focusing on the generating resource and say that generating resource should get a subsidy of some kind.
Andrew Grissell, Energy Efficiency Department. And this is our slide for updating our Q3 information with regards to savings, costs, and value. Our two-year compliance target, if you recall, was 1.66 average megawatts. We met this last year in 2016. We had an annual stretch target of 2.1 average megawatts. This has been a challenge for us to meet this year. I think we were a little over-optimistic. What we don't have on here are some large commercial projects that are likely to be and industrial projects that are likely to be completed by the end of the year. Even with those, we'll probably be in the 1.7 to 1.85 range, somewhere in there. And so we're likely that the stretch goal will be difficult to obtain, and we are still trying to get there, but the forecast right now is showing it less than that. So using historical data plus what we have in the sort of have in the pipeline coming through. And then I also wanted to provide just some information on some upcoming presentations that we'll have with the board. The first is our conservation potential assessment. Every 2 years we need to set a target associated with I-937 for our conservation for our compliance. So we are working through that now, and we will come on November 20th with a review of that, and then we will come back on December 4th to request action. And so you'll have a couple weeks to identify that. That is also it needs to be publicly noticed, which we've already done. And so all of the regulatory steps have been taken to meet that. And then we've been working on an LED streetlight project over the last year and a half. We're going to come and review a proposed LED streetlight rate, since these have a greater amount of savings to them. And this will affect our rates that are a per light monthly fee. So it won't affect the energy charge. It'll just be affected by the volume. So instead of a 200 watt light, we may be going to a 75 watt light. So it's going to look at taking into consideration those things. And there's some intersections with our grant funding that we're looking at from one of the parties, and so I'll talk about that as well. And so that will be coming up, though. And then they'll have a proposed public meeting dates as well, and we'll bring all that forward at that point in time. I wanted to give you an idea of a couple of items that are coming up. And there's our summary. That's similar as to our main points. And so we are looking at $2.7 million above budget forecast for related revenue in 2017. Our specified source sales is $1.5 million higher than our budget. And then our efficiency programs, we've met our compliance goal and our stretch goal. We're still, it's challenged, but we're still trying to make progress towards it. Any questions?
Good report. I do have a quick off-the-wall question that I think you can answer. The cover photo and the closure photo are both head of Lake Chelan taken from opposite directions. One. It's a question. I'm curious.
You are so smart.
You think I'm right?
Mm-hmm.
One's looking
direction. One's looking
down lake. One looking up lake.
Yep.
Yeah. Nice photo.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, next up we're going to do the quarterly financial review. Kelly Boyd's up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Joined by Craig Koontz.
No beautiful pictures, just straight to the back, ma'am.
Come on, Kelly.
Don't make me go there, Kelly.
So welcome to the Q3 Financial Review. I'm Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer. Joining me is Craig Kuntz, Senior Strategic Financial Analyst. And Craig and I are dividing and conquering today. You'll see Craig back this afternoon to conduct the budget hearing. So starting with the formalities of this presentation does meet a number of our resolution requirements to present quarterly status updates on our district-wide financial metrics, our business line financial metrics, our investment program, and also the board's balanced scorecard objective of maintaining strong financial stewardship. The results are consistent and even a little better than previous quarters, so we'll really cover the material rather quickly. We'll highlight results to date, take a look forward, and leave you with some key messages at the end. It is an update only. No action is required today. But also of note is that the strategic facilities plan is not reflected in this update. You'll see it in the Q4 update. So our key highlights are that our year-to-date bottom line is about $16 million better than budget, and we do expect to remain there at year-end. So the combination of revenues from the colder weather, from some of our contract charges on our cost-based contracts, and lower operating costs, all three go in the positive direction of having better results than budget. With these strong results, all of our financial metrics are meeting or exceeding our targets, and they support our staying the course on our strategic goals of reinvesting in assets of people, reducing debt, and continuing the public power benefit program. Next, let's look at the results in a little bit more detail by major components, starting with revenues. So net wholesale revenue, just the net wholesale revenue piece, is about $1 million below budget and expected to stay there. This is just a component of what you saw in Greg's highlight. The major driver of this is that while generation has been 102% of average, the retail usage has been about 110% of average, so leaves less for the amount we leave unhedged to respond to differences. So that, as well as forecasting that water will be a little bit low for the remainder of the year, has contributed to that estimate remaining a little bit below budget for the year. As Janet described, prices are also a little bit lower, but because of our hedging program and how tightly we hedge within the year that we have, that difference from price is really being minimized. This is quantity driven. On our hydro long-term contract revenue, which is our cost-based contracts, we are pretty much in line with budget. And that is the netting effect of, since they are cost-based contracts and our hydro costs are lower, that means our revenues are lower. But that's offset by our cost-based contract charges, which are higher. So Greg alluded to that a little bit, the retained surplus revenues while Alcoa is curtailed are contributing to this keeping it in line. As I mentioned, electric usage is 110% of average, so our service revenues are about $3 million higher than budget, and we do expect it to stay about at that level through the remainder of the year. And it's that increased usage from the colder winter that we had earlier in the year, which has tipped its hand early that it might be early winter at the end of the year also.
Kelly, are there any indications that our growth of new development is driving some of this?
There are some indications, and actually that you'll see a little hint of that as we look at a couple other categories.
Okay.
And then also, you know, some of the items like the new HDL rate, that's also an element, but it's really minimized because we'll see that effect over time more than immediate. When we look at other operating revenue, we're also about $3 million better than budget in that category. And there are two main drivers on this. The variable component of our real-time agreement is better than budget.
And then also the deferral payment earlier in the year for the one-year contract deferral from Alcoa. It has two parts. It has the part that was paid to defer for 1 year. You see that element in revenues in this category. And then the other part was they did pay a portion of a deferred contract charge. And that amount, you don't see all of it this year, just a little bit, because that revenue is spread over the life of the whole contract. So two elements to that, and you see the revenue piece contributing to this line item being better than budget. Moving to the expense side, our operating expenses are currently about $9 million under budget. We are forecasting to close the gap a little bit by the end of the year, but still expect to be around this level under budget by the end of the year. The primary drivers are in generation and transmission. Some of the work plan changes that you heard Kirk describe are contributing to that. Our non-operating net expense is about $1 million better than budget, and that main driver is the higher number of line extensions where customers contribute a portion of the cost. So here is one of those indicators of our increased growth. So thank you for that foreshadowing. When we look at our costs on a per unit basis, our electric fully loaded cost per average kilowatt hour is better than budget, consistent with our expenses being under budget. In both the production cost side, so the hydro side, and the distribution side, they are both better than budgeted. And our hydro production cost per average megawatt hour generated is better than budget for all three of the hydros. When we look at water, our water cost per 1,000 gallons is slightly higher than budget from some unplanned pump repairs adding to the O&M cost in that system. Our wastewater annual cost per ERU, equivalent residential unit, is also a little bit higher as it was last quarter, from the change in project plans on the Dryden treatment plant, the expenses that we had so far that were in capital needed to be expensed as we change plans for that project. And then fiber is pretty much in line. It's a few cents off, which you heard Mike describe earlier, but it's in line with our cost per active premise. Shifting to the balance sheet items, focusing on capital, we are quite a bit lower in our capital expenditures through Q3, but are expecting to really close the gap in Q4 when, you know, a lot of the charges come in. So if Greg's still here, that's not because we're not exciting either. There's a lot at the end of the year where a lot of work, where the bills start coming in, where maybe they were slower, you start finishing up on things. So it's really, catch up is a reasonable thing, although we don't think we'll catch all the way up. Expect to be about $12 million under budget through year end. There's a lot of shifting happening where some projects are shifting to the future. Some got done a little sooner. Some were done a little bit below budget, but a lot of it is really due to the timing of work plan shifting and a lot of the work now being expected to extend into 2018. That's consistent with maybe our update you heard a little bit earlier. Our cash balances remain strong, and our debt reduction strategy has been completed for the year with a $52 million reduction. So when we translate those explanations into the numbers, you'll see this really mirrored as our service revenue is better than budget from the colder winter. Our other operating revenue is better than budget from the additional costs from our cost plus contract charges, and our operating expenses are below budget. All of those combining for our bottom line to be forecast to be just over $101 million at the end of the year, which is about $16 million better than our budget. When we go one more level of detail on those bottom line results and look at it by business line, our integrated electric business line, which is everything from generating electricity to transmitting it to delivering it, is where you see the positive results that are contributing to that overall bottom line. And our other services we provide, fiber's a little bit better from the increased internal revenue for our new security upgrade uses more of our internal fiber. So you see that reflected in additional revenues there. And then water and wastewater are both a little bit below budget, as I described on those per unit looks, from some additional O&M charges. When we also take a different kind of snapshot of capital and look at capital by system, you see that the largest kind of dollar contributors are in the transmission area, where route selection work is still continuing on some of the projects that thought that would be a little bit beyond that at this point. Rocky Reach and Lake Chelan hydros also, but you'll note that Rock Island is forecasted to, in their really ambitious programs, are expected to be really close to budget, so that's a really positive result there. And then in internal services, you see that one lagging from budget, and that's the area where things like our CIS project that we expect to go into the capital phase next year, and the microwave communication replacement that Mike mentioned was also one that will be going into 2018, as well as some fleet purchases, are the types of things that contribute to that line item. When we zero in on cash flow, one of the things that I could see people wondering is, with that really strong bottom line result, what do we do with that cash generated? So this really takes that snapshot and says our bottom line year-to-date results are at $83 million. We add back the non-cash items like depreciation. So we have an estimated funds from operations of $119 million. And then we spent that on capital expenditures, on reducing debt. We did get another cash flow item that you don't see in there from the Alcoa deferral payment, which is the one where, while we spread the revenue over the life of the contract, we did get the whole cash amount in, so that's a positive. And then we paid down a lot of payables with that cash. So as I described at year end, you get a lot of bills that come in and you accrue for them, but they're not yet paid. So that's where you see, but we paid them, so we used a lot of cash this year to pay them down. So all in all, we used most of the cash for paying the bills and added a $5 million differential to our cash balance. We've had a cash increase over the first three quarters of the year of $5 million. When we look at the components of that cash balance between unrestricted funds and restricted funds, you'll see that we do have the addition of the new board-designated fund for saving for the strategic facilities plan. It's a new line item on this report, and it is an unrestricted fund. It's up in that category because it's internally restricted by the board, and the board has the ability to unrestrict. So when we report that externally, it does show up in unrestricted funds, but it has been designated and set aside by board direction to show that we are planning ahead and saving for the strategic facilities plan. When we look at our financial metrics for the district for this year and the next 5 years out, we are forecasting that we will be in compliance with all of our metrics through 2021. When we also look at that on a business line basis, we are also forecasting being in line with our business line metrics for water, wastewater, and fiber. And what we've added new this year from our work of going one more level of detail into the integrated electric system, where we have some test metrics that we're trying out. This is probably the second time that we've talked about them in the board session, where we are establishing new metrics, and we want to learn what they tell us and see if they're really the right metrics for us to be monitoring the more in line with the details on our retail electric system. You see that two of these are yellow, or caution, where our operations, maintenance, and taxes, so that's our OMT cost ratio, is just a little bit, we want it to be higher. We want the ratio targeted to be greater than 90%, and it's not quite there. So what this is telling us is that gap. It's hard to describe on the percentages, but it's the gap between our O&M costs that are covered by retail rates and the amount that's covered by the surplus sales. And so you can tell that that gap's a little bit stressed, meaning that we're relying a little bit more than we want to for the wholesale sales to fill that gap. So the gap is a little bit bigger. And the retail rate support that's also yellow as caution is you can also see that that number is a little bit bigger than we are targeting, which means the stress on the gap is we're just relying on that gap a little more. But you can see that it flips back and forth. It's pretty close. Out in 2021, we are meeting those metrics. So what it really indicates to us is that we do see more reliance on that wholesale component, where we know that those wholesale revenues are forecasted to remain low prices in the future. So that all of these just indicate that this is an area that we want to continue to zero in on, and we'll have additional focus on this even through the looking at our revenue management policies with the board and our debt policies to continue working on more. Another level of detail in those will really help us clarify if these are the right metrics for us and what they're telling us. So does that make sense? I want to pause there.
Now, both those numbers exclude the cost of energy.
No, that would be included in part of the cost to part of the cost to operate the systems. So it's the coverage of all of your costs to operate the electric systems, the retail electric system. So the retail electric system buys their proportionate share from the hydro. So this is just their proportionate share of those costs, of what it costs to deliver the energy to customers.
Well, just a little bit back, we were saying our fully loaded cost was about 6 cents a kilowatt hour. And our current customer charge is a little over 3. So if you see where I'm a little bit confused, where do you get an 87 or a 90% number if you're including all costs?
So this is just the O&M side of it. There's also the capital side where rates pay for a portion of capital also. And so a fully loaded cost, the fully loaded cost metric, the other piece that can be confusing too is that's not trying to represent a cost of service because there are offsets in there. So contributions for customers from some of the capital is an offset. Interest earnings is an offset. So that fully loaded cost metric that we track is just the cost side of it without any offsets. So it's not trying to be a fully loaded cost of service. Mm-hmm. So there are more moving parts to the cost of service. So that's where I can see the connections that you're talking about. And that's why these are good for testing too, because we can work on clarifying that piece of this metric to help relate to that cost per kilowatt hour.
I think it's really valuable to have some metrics and, like you say, find out what the right metrics are.
Yeah, and these are looking at it from all different angles. So like we talk about, it's not just one metric that can tell us what we need to know. So these are looking at it from a number of different angles to try to zero in on the information and where the necessary actions are. So we will keep this topic of conversation going, and you will see it continuously as discussion items. On our quarterly investment report, our earnings improved a little bit from last quarter because we were holding a lot of the cash in savings because we were preparing for our big July 1 principal and interest payment on our debt. So we were able to invest longer in Q3 because we didn't need to hold that cash. So our earnings have improved a little bit. We do see earnings improving in the market a little bit, but it's a slow improvement. And so we are confirming that our strategies of, safety and principle around our liquidity are still the strategies to continue. So all of that together, we leave you with our key messages of our 2017 results are better than budget. Our long-term financial policies are on track, although we do see that continued message of lower wholesale revenues in the future with our increasing investments in assets and people. So those two coming together to indicate that new debt borrowing and new revenue management will be needed sooner in our planning horizon than we previously forecast. But even with that, the timing is still right to stay the course on our strategic goals of reinvesting in those core assets and people, achieving debt reduction, and continuing our public power benefit program. Any additional questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Debt reduction this year was $52 million.
Yes.
Thank you.
Quarterly update on major projects?
Yes, as we do every quarter, it's a chance to review how we're doing on our major projects and contracts. Dave Nelson will present.
Morning, Commissioners. Dave Nelson, Business Advisor. And I'm here to present some reports requested quarterly by the board as part of the delegated authority. The first of those is the active major capital projects report. It's going to highlight some of the changes. You see the variance on the schedule for B7 and B6. B6 has been delayed, and B7 is going to be following that, and so the completion of that is also delayed as a result. A little further down, you see the red X's for NEAT Park upgrades and the Headworks gantry crane. And I would note that those two were reported to the board and are not changed since last quarter.
So, Dave, a quick question.
Sure.
Back on B6 and B7, the 214 and the 217, those numbers, what significance are they?
Those are the number of days that the project is delayed from what we had forecasted as the finish date as of the beginning of the year.
Thank you.
So the updated expected finish is the date next to it. So in the case of B6, you can see that it was forecast to be done in June of 2017, and now it's forecast to be done right about at the end of January, or this has February 1st, I think, is what the date shows there, but 217 days. Okay, so a little right in the middle of the page, we actually have a project, the Rocky Reach Generator Fire Protection System, that we've actually removed from our forecast. So you can see the variance there in the cost, just a removal of the $5.5 million. In this case, we had planned to replace the existing CO2 system in those generators. Right now, based on industry guidance, we will be installing a fast alarming and tripping on all the units as part of a fire alarm system project, and so we don't believe it's necessary to do this. There's continuing to be some studies on that we're participating in, and if it's determined that we need to, we would be adding that back, but at this point we don't believe we'll need it.
I believe that's based on advice from the insurance folks.
Yes. The next project, the Rocky Reach Bridge Cranes, is a schedule is also delayed. It was reported to the board last quarter. And then down at the bottom, the security infrastructure that was previously reported to the board, but that's an additional delay to that project to complete it, pushing it into March of 2018. And then at the bottom, the fleet delay receiving some purchases was reported last quarter. The next two pages are the capital project budget revisions during the quarter. And most of these are net zero changes of moving budget between projects, some that didn't need it and some projects that did need it. At the bottom of the page, you'll note a section of blue that were a $5.7 million addition to the Rock Island Powerhouse B1 through 4 modernization project. That was approved by the board in August, presentation regarding a change in scope in that project. And then on the next page, there's also the public power benefit Rocky Reach Visitor Center improvements $4 million was added. And then the Rocky Reach bridge cranes, it was a revision to that project. As we've gotten that project started and got in there and seen some things, we've identified a need to increase the scope of that project. So there was some small changes in some flow meter projects in hatcheries, and then $140,000 in servers and items related, primarily related to Skype for Business. So overall, $7.3 million increase in projects during the quarter. Most of this spending is not forecasted for this year, but for the larger forecast. And most of that, as I identified, was part of the B1 through 4 modernization projects. Okay, the next three pages are active contracts greater than $1 million. On the first page, you'll note we have some yellow or possible adjustments needed on these. These are purchase contracts associated with Ondrit's contracts related to B5 through 8 modernization projects. And due to the delays with B6 and the rescheduling of all those projects, we expect that we'll have to extend the end date on those purchase contracts to allow the completion of those projects. On the next page, the two items highlighted in green are two new task authorizations under a contract with Stantec Consulting for Rock Island Powerhouse 2 rehabilitation evaluation and a Rocky Reach Juvenile Fish Bypass Trash Rake Bridge. And then no items on the last page. And then the last thing just to identify is that there are no negotiated contracts during the quarter to report.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Nope. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Business data local loop.
Morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
Bob Shane with the Fiber and Telecom. We are here to introduce an enhanced data local loop, or DLL, service for business use. I'll review why we need the new service offering and provide an overview of that service. We are also looking at a target date of January 1st, 2018 for availability. In addition, I want to clarify the intent and application of some existing services, and we plan to seek approval at the November 20th board meeting. The new service is the response to meeting our customer owner needs. Our current DLL services meet most business and residential needs, but a new class of services needed by some businesses, which offers enhanced functionality, that specifically being static IP addresses and static IP routing. Note that the business class DLL is delivered over our existing system, so no new equipment or devices are needed. It's simply a provisioning change that has to take place. Here's a rate and fee comparison between what we currently have. The center line or center section is the residential. To the far right is the business class. 10% increase in rate. Essentially, that meets our financial needs, provides a competitive rate for our providers to operate over our system. And we will revise that rate as needed if we see that it's too high or too low going forward. We also have some language clarifications. From our last rate action change, we missed adding symmetrical to the digital local loop service. Plus, we want to add some clarity to the applicability of our optional and miscellaneous services. POTS, which is a plain old television, or plain old telephone, sorry, IPTV, Internet Protocol TV, VoiceOver, Internet Protocol, and RF video transmit port. Those all need to be used in conjunction with a data service, DLL or VLAN type service. So we'll add some clarification in our rate definitions. Next steps, we'll come back to the board on November 20th seeking approval. And if approved, as I mentioned before, we'd like to have the rates take place January 1st, 2018. All of the other remaining rates remain in effect. Are there any questions?
I just add this has been discussed with those folks who would be affected by it, and it's their interest that's driving this, and we have heard no objections.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So a little bit out of the ordinary, but
any of you that looked at the agenda as it was presented to us, our resolutions were scheduled for this morning's session. And so, with your permission, we'll just move right into the consent agenda and then our resolution. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda, which now has been modified to include resolutions 10, 11, 15, and 16?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the consent agenda as modified.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda with the inclusion of resolutions 10, 11, 15, and 16. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. All right, now we're on the regular agenda. We would start with resolution 12.
This is a resolution authorizing the general manager to enter into a services agreement, SA number 17-177, with Computer 5 Incorporated, Local Telecommunications of East Wenatchee, Washington, for telephone local exchange carrier services. Bob Shane, David Lodge will present for us.
I'm Bob Shane, Director of Fiber and Telecom, once again, and with me.
David Lodge, Project Manager of Engineering and Project Management. So we're here today to present resolution to award service agreement to Local Telecommunications. So to give you a little bit of history on how we got to this point, we are currently under a contract with Local Telecommunications for our phone service. And we put this RFP together to come up with a new service for carrier services to take advantage of our new voice over IP phone system. We received two proposals. And after evaluation, we selected Localtel as the most responsive proposer. But one of the options we selected with Localtel is for the district to provide the last mile of fiber service from the central office to our district facilities. And that allows us to take advantage of some cost savings. So during negotiations, we created an implementation plan that included a phasing the cutover. Since we have our current phone service with Localtel, we're able to not do it in one flash cut, but we can transition slowly into this new service. And once we're complete with the cutover, we'll have a more resilient service than we currently have. And like I said, take advantage of our voice over IP telephone system, which gives us a bit better pricing than we had before and keeps our phone bill from going up. So to get into a little bit more detail about what the new service entails, Bob Shane was going to give us some details on that.
So the advancements in technology have allowed us to increase our resiliency and redundancy of our phone service. Current system, we have two geographical areas that we have redundancy between the two locations. Under the new design, we actually now have four areas that we have redundancy. So we won't have any isolated areas within the district. Should you have a phone failure, we have a great recovery of our system in order to keep those services up and going. Part of our standard method of operation is we cut over. One thing we want to make sure, because of the criticality of our phone service, is to make sure that we migrate over in such a way that we fully test the system prior to switching over to the new system. We are switching from one solution to another, so we will have to check that before we commit and totally flip over to the new system. So I assure you that that's part of our standard procedure to get that right so that we have continuity in our phone service as we make that transition. It's very important to us.
Any questions?
When do you expect to, when does that test occur?
The actual schedule? Mm-hmm. Do you have that?
It'll be about March of next year. We're going to start in January with the first phase of testing, and then transition some of the phone numbers to the new service and then the balance of them. So that'll allow us to make sure that we're doing all the testing that we need to do and that we're getting the level of service that we expect as we move into that. So around March, we should be done.
And we do it in such a way that we actually isolate the two services so we keep the phone calls going on the other system while we test the new system.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to take a moment just to introduce items 13 and 14. You may recall that at the last board meeting, we discussed the strategic facilities plan and decided that we would pursue the Rock Island and Rocky Reach facilities on a separate path from the other facilities. And so this is taking the next step forward in terms of implementing the facilities plan with a focus on Rock Island and Rocky Reach. With that, I'll ask Sam Billy and Dan Fraser to come up. Looks like it's just going to be Sam.
Good morning, Sam Dilley, Project Manager. As Steve indicated, we're here in October 16th talking about the facilities. We had authorization to, we had concurrence to move forward with Rock Island and Rocky Reach. Implementation at Rock Island involves 5 new buildings and 19 building rehabilitations. Implementation at Rocky Reach involves 7 new buildings and 18 building rehabilitations. These resolutions provide contracting capacity to perform the design of these improvements in task authorizations. For example, the first task authorization in 2018 would cover 30% design of all of the Rock Island facilities and 100% design of 2 of the new buildings, the Blast Building and what's called C1 building. Similarly, the RH2 contract would allow us to provide site design, stormwater, septic, drinking water, that sort of thing, to 100% next year. In 2015, the district performed a RFP process. We went out for architectural consultants. We received about 10 proposals. From that list of proposers, we selected 2 to interview. TCF was one of the 2 that we interviewed. They had excellent references at the time. They had been involved. They had done the Link Transit station here in Wenatchee. They also worked with the Wenatchee School District. And they had completed a large project for Mason County PUD number 3. They had also proposed with a local engineering firm, and we like to see that as well. Based on that information, we selected them back in 2015 to do our strategic facility planning. Over the past 22 months, TCF has provided excellent service. They've been very responsive. You've seen a number of presentations from them. Very timely, knowledgeable. They've been under budget on all 4 task authorizations that they've completed so far. So those are good metrics. They also have unique qualifications to help us go forward and with the continuing of the program. RH2, we've worked with for over 15 years. I've been here. I've worked with RH2. They're a local presence. They know Chelan County and they know Douglas County, where we'll be working, and they have a good working relationship with those agencies. They know their way around civil engineering. So based on this information, the team recommends that we continue facility work. All of the work under these resolutions amending the contracts would be approved at the task authorization level by the delegated manager, the responsible manager. With that, just to complete the presentation, the TCF contract is for an amendment increasing the contract amount by $4 million and the RH2 resolution increasing the contract amount by $1 million. Do you have any questions?
Before we go to that, I'd just like to reinforce this is not a decision to build. This is a decision to take another step forward to do additional, more detailed pre-design engineering work and be able to test the assumptions in our strategic plan and then make a decision as to whether or not these buildings are cost-effective as the strategic plan would indicate. But until we get the actual numbers, we can't come to that conclusion.
Super. Any questions? Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Resolution 14.
Well, we covered 13 and 14 together there.
Okay.
So we're now up to, I believe, number
17.
Resolution authorizing the execution of field work order change order number 03-04 for Unit C9 pole refurbishment under contract number 15-23 for the Rocky Reach Unit C8 through C11 stator winding replacement project with Alston Power Incorporated. And George Velasquez will join us.
Good morning. George Velasquez, manager of Rocky Reach Lake Chelan Engineering Project Management Department. I'm here today to request authorization to proceed with field work order 0304 under contract 1523 with GE Alstom. The C8 through C11 stator winding replacement of all four units have been completed, and we're in the final testing and checkout of C8. In the contract, the project team contemplated and included provisions for refurbishing the rotor poles for C9. C9 is the last unit of all four large units, 1 through 11, that still contains asbestos in the in the rotor poles. The other C8, C10, and C11 rotor poles have been refurbished in previous contracts and previous years. The option for refurbishment was included as Schedule E in the contract 1523 with GE Alstom, and the district had the ability to exercise that Schedule E at any given time during the rewind process of C9. And during the execution of that work, many things came into play, such as C8 outer head cover crack issues and bridge crane repair work that threw us into a rescheduling of all these different windings. So with that, we could not execute the C9 rotor pole refurbishment work. So through field work order, change order 0304, GE Alstom will be required to return to Rocky Reach sometime in March of 2018 to remove, refurbish, and replace the rotor poles for C9 for the contract price of $490,433 as proposed in the contract. However, since they do have to return, they will be demobilized and will have to remobilize back in February or March. There is a cost associated with that. That cost has been negotiated around $41,420. So the total rotor pole refurbishment field work order that we're proposing is worth $531,853. Now, the work of rotor pole removal, refurbishment, reinstallation, testing, and checkout was scheduled to take approximately 3 months. But since we could not reasonably do it during the C9 rewind work, the value of staying on schedule and getting C9 back online was considered. And it actually allowed us to return C9 back to service around April 28th, 2017, as opposed to a potential months later. So we realized some value out of that decision. Any questions?
I think we're... Kirk's going to add something to this because the movement, the $40,000 movement on this contract is what causes us to be over and bring it to you. But I think there's a bigger picture here, too, that's worth taking a moment to hear about.
Yeah, it's easy to lose sight. Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission, of all the moving parts out there at Rocky Reach right now. And the resolution George has here is actually one that we expected to. He mentioned that this work was part of the contract that we had awarded to Alstom and was to be done during the time when C9 was being rewound. You might recall that we actually planned to rewind those four large generators, C8 through 11, over a four-year period at Rocky Reach, and they're all done. And it was, what was it, a year and a half?
About 2 years.
2 years, almost 2 years. And so we missed the window. We accelerated that work greatly because of all the problems we were having, and as a result, we missed this window on C9 because we were just moving from one generator to the other. C9 rewound, C10, 11, and then 8 will come back in service at the end of this year. So we weren't, Steve and I were just chatting about whether or not the board knew that all four of those units were actually rewound with new generators. And okay. Yeah. So
thank you.
Yeah, we thought that was pretty important to add here. Yeah. So
never want to lose sight of the big picture.
No. Well, it's easy. It's easy to with all the moving parts and things that are getting deferred and delayed, and then things that are getting accelerated. And so, good reminder.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, George.
Thank you.
Commissioner, we've got four resolutions before us, 12, 13, 14, and 17. What is the desire of the commission?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of resolutions 12. Oh, wait. I marked it on. Repeat those again, please.
12, 13, 14, and 17.
17. 12, 13, 14, and 17.
Right. My second. So moved and seconded to approve those four resolutions. Mm-hmm. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you. Manager items.
I want to invite Mike Coleman up. He wants to introduce some new friends in the district.
Good morning again. Mike Coleman, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. With me, I have Kelly Ryan, who is the CEO and founder of iFiber Communications. In the past, we've talked about one of the biggest risks to the fiber program, the biggest business risk, was having one dominant provider. iFiber has been on our network for about 10 years already. They got excluded from being a triple play provider back in the mid-2000s because of our old video head end. We replaced that or sold the video head end off in 2015 and implemented IPTV last year, and that opened the door for iFiber to come back to the district as a full triple play provider and to offer some competition on the network. So with that, I'm going to let Kelly introduce his company and some of the team members that came today.
Thank you, Commissioners. We've been at this since 2000. So to say that we're old veterans and warriors, we have been through the trenches, as all of us have been, in the fiber project. We're based in Grant County, although now we're currently in seven different counties. We have expanded now into Grant, Douglas, and of course we were here in Chelan. We've never done any marketing. We've never done any sales. Really, we've just been in an alternate on the list. But in the other counties, we've expanded. You know, we went to Ponderay as Ponderay got the RUS dollars and did that project. We took about a 74% take rate when it was all said and done. We're very excited about how that project turned out. Really, for a 10-year plan, Ponderay reached their goals in, well, the first year. We had a broadband festival up there and took over 1,000 applications. So we're very excited about that results, and we took it on the road. And so Mason County was our next target, went to Mason, did the broadband festival there, took another 1,000 applications in that process. Unfortunately, Mason found that they were a little behind the curve as far as their network, so they had to do some upgrading to it, which is what they're currently doing as we speak. But from that, we went on up to Kitsap. Kitsap County, we don't have an office up there, but from Mason, we can take care and launch our service people up there as well. But they've gone to a little different plan. They go into particular areas of new construction, things like that, and we've had, you know, we take almost 100% of that business as we've gone with the full triple play. And one of the unique things about iFiber is we can take our triple play anywhere into the state of Washington. We are 100% PUD. We don't own our own infrastructure. We don't compete with you. We do not overbuild you. We are here as your sales and marketing team, period. And that's what we've done across the state. So the latest one is Franklin County, and they've got, and this is kind of a new endeavor, they've done a wireless build down there that we're currently working with there in their newest Connell project, and there's two more behind that that will be kind of branching into a different area for us, because up to point we've been pretty much just fiber. We are a full triple play provider. Like I say, we transport all our signals across the state, again, using NOAANet. So anywhere NOAANet goes, we can launch services as well. So to summarize, we're extremely excited about this opportunity. We are coming in full forces, full sales force. We're going to be, your number one provider. We're going to work real hard and fight real hard to make that happen. We've got a long road. You've got a good competitor here, which is one of the reasons we've gone into other counties. You know, as we assessed, you know, counties that are coming to us, and we have a lot, you know, saying we'd love to have you there. You know, the other counties didn't really have a strong provider. So that's one of the reasons why we went everywhere thinking, at some point, we got to go back to Chelan. But then one of the big things that really made it for us that was the final part of our decision is we can now do television, IPTV, here with this amazing infrastructure you guys have built. We're extremely proud to be now a provider, and we want to make you guys very, very proud of us. So with that being said, I can answer any questions you might have.
I'm going to add one comment. Kelly's company has kept customers on the network, and they've even shown growth, even though they weren't actively marketing it. So for the last 3 years, every time I've seen Kelly, I have bugged him about when he was coming back to Chelan. And they officially launched last Wednesday with a new office here in Wenatchee.
I apologize. I thought, oh, yes, 303 Mission. Best kept secret right now in Wenatchee, okay? You're very, very secretive about this for northy reasons. Which
North
I
or South Mission?
South, sir. In fact, it's a Vernon, what's Vernon's last name? And I should take a moment to introduce my, Vernon Cox's building. We took over the first and second floor of that whole facility, and it's perfect because we're right around the corner from a new location that our competitors are going to. So it'll make it real good for your customers to look for, who they're going to go with. I should take a second to introduce my team because, as good as I am, which I'm not, but I really got a super great first-rate team that I'd like to introduce you to. And I'm going to start with my business and partner in crime there. That's Jason Passon. He's now sporting the new mustache, so that's something new. He went on vacation, came back with that, and we didn't know who he was for the first couple days when he showed up. So, but that's Jason Passon. He's our chief operating officer, and sitting behind him, directly behind him, that's Dean Christensen. Dean is our new business developer. Sitting next to him is Bobby McCurdy. He is director of operations. So when you look at our iFiber communications side, Bobby heads it up statewide for us. So all of those offices, all those people, so when there's someone to blame, that's pretty much where you go. And sitting next to him is our director of marketing. That's Spencer King. You're going to see a lot of Spencer. He's also heads up our iFiber One endeavor. Now, we're a little different. Now, I can say that, we were first. I want to say that for sure as far as, launching news, launching sports. We have a media side to our company. But if you really think about it, iFiber, one of the ways that we marketed, and I did, we went to newspapers, we'd go to radio, and we spent a lot of money and time and energy to really not get the super results that we really felt we should be getting. And my background was television production, so it was natural for us to go to our board and say, hey, let's take some of that money we're spending, and let's spend it on ourselves and create this whole new division. And that was iFiber One. So we started broadcasting high school sports, college sports. We started hiring reporters. We started then basically filing stories, news stories, and pursuing that entire thing. We're now just in Central Washington. We have over 500,000 followers of our news and sports right now with iFiberOne.com. But then we took it on the road, took it over to Mason, and bought a radio station. I would not recommend doing that all the time. That's been something that Jason's given me a lot of heck on. But it's an AM/FM station. But it broadcasts into Olympia, and for politics and for a lot of reasons, we have a morning political show. When you're dealing with PUDs, it is a bit of a political animal. So you better keep your P's and Q's lined up, which is what we did. And iFiber One allows us to do that, and that's what Spencer King heads up for us as well. But if you think about it in the biggest terms, it's our marketing company. How we brand ourselves with iFiber, going into these new areas, we look for the media side, and we spend money on that media side, and that's how we reach our customers and brand ourselves quickly. And we're, iFiber.com is the biggest advertiser on iFiber One, which is now a fully separate LLC. So we're very excited. Like I said, we're a little different, and here it's going to be, let's just say we were doing this long ahead of another competitor that decided to get into the TV business of late. So we know this very, very, very well, the space very well. I know this space very well. So we're going to be using that, and we're expanding iFiber One into that second floor of Vernon's building. That's what is going on upstairs. Is where our reporters are going, and we're going to be spending a lot of time with you guys, and we're expanding now our news operation, although we have followers from Wenatchee, but now we're going to give them stories, a lot more, home-based stories here. So that's where we're at with the iFiber One and the team. So,
thank you. I'll answer questions.
Great introduction.
Great news.
Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Good news.
I will simply say welcome, Kelly. We're glad to have you on the network.
Thank you so very much. We are very honored, and we will make you proud, okay?
Great. Thank you, Kelly. Nice to meet you.
Yep, thanks for taking the risk. We appreciate it.
We're going to stay on the fiber theme for a moment here and ask Suzanne Hartman and Melissa Meyer to come up and talk about a recent event they were involved in.
Good morning, Commissioners. Suzanne Hartman, Manager of Communications.
And I'm Melissa Mayer, Management Analyst in Fiber and Telecom.
So I'm sure all of you celebrated with great zest the National Gimme Fiber Day on November 4th, Saturday. I'm sure you had your shredded wheat or whatever.
That's what I was thinking.
Now, however, that's not what I'm talking about. And Melissa's here actually to talk about a campaign that the PUD will be undertaking, and it kind of goes along with the theme that you've heard already. Go ahead.
Well, we're excited. We've been continuing to grow with our public power benefit program and along with our regular installations on the network. And we are rapidly approaching a milestone for our network, which is the milestone of 15,000 customers. As of this morning, we're at 14,816.
Wow.
And so to get us to that 15,000 mark, we wanted to encourage PUD customers who have access to our network but have not yet connected. So we're doing a unique promotion beginning next week on November 13th to encourage those customers to sign up by offering a free iPad to those customers, to one of those customers who signs up between now and December 14th.
We'll have a drawing, and so to reach our 15,000 by the end of the year.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Good.
Tell your friends and neighbors.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we will.
Thank you.
Great.
Can I?
That's a great number.
That is a wonderful number.
Yeah.
How will you be doing your outreach?
We'll start next week, and we've got the iPad that we'll use as the incentive, the hook, and we'll be doing the typical PUD radio and what else?
Radio, newspaper.
Newspaper, and yeah.
Great. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and so, of course, social media, and yeah.
But don't underestimate how exciting these transcriptions and recordings are to listen to. We're just doing our outreach right there.
You probably have your 15,000
sure,
that's right.
Yeah, and they're just waiting.
That's right.
Okay. And then I'd just like to give you a quick update. Last week, we had November 1st, we had our electric vehicle event, our autonomous Teslas that showed up on November 1st to introduce a speaker from PNNL, Dr. Michael Kintner-Meyer, and it was a great event. We had more than 80 people there. It was a wonderful event. About 75 people got to take rides. We had about 5 of the autonomous vehicles there. So all in all, it was a great event, and Steve was the moderator for the panel. We had to kick him out.
It was, I have to say, it was really interesting to see how focused the group was and how intense they were in terms of their engagement. And we did have to end it basically at 8:30 because we weren't sure that otherwise people were going to go home.
Yeah. And now, mind you, that was the final game of the World Series too. So I felt pretty good about that we did it.
Did those vehicles drive themselves up from the Tri-Cities?
No, they did not. they had a human with them who just was there just in case, you know, just, yeah. Yeah. Well, fortunately, it hadn't started snowing either, so we didn't have to worry about that. Then there's one last thing. I'd like to invite the commissioners to our fifth annual chili cook-off that'll happen a week from Wednesday, the 15th, in the old auditorium. We'll be back in the original auditorium, and we've got the police department with us, the Wenatchee Police Department. The chief is going to be the cook, the chef. So I left these in your office, but here for you.
Are you going to save?
Oh, you got them.
You're going to save some leftovers.
I think
all of us are going to be in Olympia.
I'm sorry.
So I'm
sorry. Yeah. Sure, we'll save. And you're not going to get to vote either for the favorite chili.
I'll miss that.
A special meeting if they vote.
Yeah, special meeting for it. Okay, that's great. And
that's too bad.
Of course, Eric will be cooking one of the chilies.
Well, so will Mike, I'm betting.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm not this year.
Okay. But anyway, we would like to invite you. That's for United Way. It's a fundraiser. And last year, we raised $4,000 from that event. So it was fabulous.
It's a good event. I've been to it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good event. It's a wonderful event.
Yeah. So thank you.
And just have one more item. So we do have the public meeting scheduled to discuss the future of Arundel River Park. That's for November 6th. Recall that we've provided 3 options, or actually 4 options, if you include the status quo.
November 6th is today.
I'm sorry. November 14th. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
November 14th at 6:30 at the Arondo School, and that's where we'll be talking about the getting public comment on future ownership and maintenance options. We would like to just do a quick survey to see how many of you are planning to attend to see if there's a need to call a special meeting. Commissioner Cotton.
What's the date again, 14th?
14th.
November
14th. Tuesday evening?
Yeah.
Yes, Tuesday, November.
Yeah, I have it in my calendar, so I'm planning on.
I will be in Olympia. So.
What time?
6:30.
6:30. Thank you. It's the Arondo School, you said.
Yeah.
So that's two of you.
I'm available to attend.
Yeah. Commissioner Smith is not available. Commissioner McKenna, are you planning to attend?
I'm planning on.
So if available and
desires
attending,
or available or both.
We'll set a special meeting.
Chat a little bit more about it. Are we hinging on three?
Well, we'd have to set a meeting if there's three.
Yes, if there are three of you.
I will be there.
So we will need a meeting?
Yeah.
So when was that?
November 14th.
At 6:30?
Mm-hmm. Arondo School.
So we'll do a motion a little later then.
I'm working on that right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it for manager items, and I would also note that there were no follow-up items from the last meeting. So we'll collect follow-up items later in the day from this meeting.
Okay, and I see Lisa in the back of the room, and commissioners will permit me, I'll do commission travel before commission items.
That'd be good.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Lisa Sanders, admin and finance. To review your travel for the next couple months. And before I forget, I want to let you know that I will be out of the office for the two meetings in December. Would you like me to come to the next board meeting? Do you want someone to stand in for me in December? Should we skip it?
Let's see what we get here, what certainty we get, and maybe you might be able to miss a month.
Okay.
See what.
So.
Because you've got to.
Just let me know.
Yeah.
Just let me know. So we have Commissioner Congdon traveling to Portland for Women in Public Power.
Yeah, Lisa. Actually, I will not be here for the Tri-Commission meeting because I'm going down tomorrow. Okay. The 7th.
Oh.
7 through 9, yeah.
So do we have the correct hotel reservation then for the 7th?
No. We do have the correct one.
Okay.
I thought you said, do we have the correct?
Okay.
We're good.
The meeting is 8th through the 9th, so I have that.
Okay. Starts early on the 8th. So.
For Waputa meetings, looks like we have everyone registered. Commissioner Congdon also has flight and rental car. All that information should be in your Outlook calendar. So if you're looking for anything, feel free to call me. But that's where I'm going to look as well. So if that is not helpful for you, let me know. We'll figure something else out. We have the Waputa Annual Conference. Attached is the registration form. If you could fill that out and get it back to me, or give me a call or email, and I'll get that taken care of.
Yeah, go ahead, Randy. The date of the 28th, I still think, is the wrong date.
Right.
So it would be the 29th. That we'll
so just let me know what dates you want exactly, and when I...
Okay.
Update them. I will get it exactly what you want for
okay.
Check in and check out.
All right.
And I think you've already changed. I just want to double check. I have to go to Olympia on the backup on the November the 14th, and I think you've already added a day on that, if I'm not mistaken. I have to be there the night.
In the DoubleTree?
Night of the 14th.
Yeah. I'll double check it.
And the annual conference?
Yeah.
I won't be able to attend. I'm going to be out of the country. I won't be going to that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so on the annual conference, I'll be specifically needing a room the 29th and 30th and be checking out on the 1st.
Okay, I will make that happen.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Can we check with the other commissioners? Because I heard some differences around that annual meeting. So
I'm checking.
Commissioner Arsenault, do you know what day you want to arrive?
I'm just looking at the registration form, and it says the 29th or the 1st. I would be checking in on the 29th.
Yeah, the only thing for commissioners is the commissioner education meeting starting, I believe, at noon or 1 o'clock.
Which means we can get there in time.
On the
29th. Okay. Yeah.
So it'll be the...
Say that.
Be two nights.
I believe it's the... on the 29th, Wednesday the 29th, the first commissioner... meeting is the education committee committee meeting. It's either noon or 1 o'clock. I think it's 1.
I'm not looking at it, but so I think
still,
that's correct.
That would still work for me.
Yeah, so yeah. For the annual conference, I would be the two nights, the 29th and the 30th, coming back home on the 1st.
That would be the same.
Okay, so I have Commissioner Congdon not attending, and everyone else will check in the 29th and out the 1st.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, I'll make that change.
Yeah. Commissioner Education is at 1, Executive Committee is at 3, and the reception at 5.
Yeah.
On that Wednesday the 29th.
And will you all be driving?
Yeah.
Driving.
Yes. That way you can go through Wilbur and get a belly burger. So
it's all the strategy.
That's like.
Those are good.
I plan shopping that way sometimes.
Yeah.
So, Lisa, you can put me down for those same dates, the 29th and the 30th.
Yeah. Okay.
And you're going to be doing our registration forms for us, I'm assuming?
Yes, it's attached to your form.
Yeah, and I imagine several of us will be taking our spouses.
Yes.
And we'll pay their fees directly, but we need to put it on this form, don't we?
Yes. My plan is that I will collect all of your individual forms and combine them together in one form and then have them bill each of you separately for your personal costs.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Very good. So you need these forms back from us probably sooner rather than later.
Yes, there's the 15th is the early registration deadline for the lower cost.
Gotcha. Right.
Now,
So, should we spend a moment just on that last one in December? Because if that one is approved, then we may not need to have Lisa come back for a December meeting.
Hmm. Yeah, well, we're not, it's just sort of notification. I think Gary's already registered for the December one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All good there.
Yeah.
Gary's
going to a conference in San Francisco, which looked like a really good conference. ABPA.
I haven't seen any notice of it.
It came out to us via email, I think, with ABPA.
So ABPA has been trying to do some forward-looking, the changing relationship between utilities and their customers, particularly as a result of distributed generation. Those kinds of issues, and so it's built around that concept. And there's a series of these that they're putting on. So if there's an interest there, just need to let us know. It's certainly, I think they would welcome more participation.
Yeah.
Well, can you make sure that those, if there are going to be a series of them, right?
This is probably going to be the closest one, though, to us.
Oh, it is. But anyway, if you could just make sure we get that information.
Yeah, I think it came. Gary called me or emailed me because he said we'd gotten it via email.
Yeah.
On our PUD email from APPA, and I looked back. I hadn't paid that close attention. I think we all got it in just the probably didn't pay that close attention. He did. So it's probably back there.
You know, I've missed a couple of emails because they have spelled my name. I'm not sure where that originated, but my name is spelled wrong on the PUD email address. So I've missed a couple of emails that way. Probably need to follow up on that. I do.
Okay. So, anyway, that's...
So, Steve, were you expecting that we'd have other people registering for this, or... I wasn't sure
I'm checking to see right here.
Okay.
Yeah. So you want to look, probably go back and look it up on APPA website. Take a look at it. So.
Yeah, I'm gone anyway at this one, but if there are future ones that are reasonably
I agree
close,
with you
I'd
because
be interested.
That, it really looked like a good conference. So anyway, so I think we're good on that. So January, February.
Can I just make sure I'm clear for this? Is there a water committee meeting, Waputo Water Committee meeting?
There is.
I didn't see it.
At the time, there will be a quarterly meeting, though, so I was going to ask Gary if he might sit in on that for me.
In December?
Yes. This will be at the annual meeting.
Oh, yeah,
Usually is Friday at the annual meeting, I think.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Follows the Heritage Breakfast. Yeah. It's usually done by what?
11 or 12 noon.
Yeah.
So it's not separate from the annual conference?
No.
No, it's always part of the conference.
Okay, so I'll just delete this from the form. Is that fine?
I think it...
Yeah.
I think
okay. So I have one more thing on December. Commissioner Arsenault, I think we still need to chat about your flight.
Yes.
Alternate travel form.
Yes. And get that to you.
Okay. The meetings on the back, I found the meeting dates. If you like the DoubleTree, I can work with them again to see if we can get the government rate. Like we did this year.
Is that different from where we've been?
One down at the bottom of Capitol Avenue.
Down by the waterfront.
Used to be Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, used
to, that's the one we've been staying.
Right. Okay. It's less expensive than the other one that's really close to the headquarters. You know, the other one's a little more convenient. But
yeah, I like that.
I like the one down the road.
We get some exercise.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've got the dash. You know, the bus that runs every 15, 20 minutes. It'll take you up there. So it's not like you have to walk in the rain unless you want to.
So go to DoubleTree.
The APPA.
Again?
Yeah, sounds like DoubleTree.
Okay. And then the legislative rally in February. I have Commissioner.
I'm not going to be going to the legislative rally this year.
In D.C.?
Family conflict.
Oh, my goodness.
Lisa, I'm not going to February Waputo.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
But I will January.
And I am thinking since you are not attending, then I think I will attend.
Okay.
The rally. Good.
And by the way, the Waputo staff stays at the Beacon Hotel, which is about two blocks from the Mayflower. And it's really a very nice place. That's where I stayed last year. And if you're looking at options, the Beacon is really, it is a good spot.
And that's where the breakfast is, and, you know, they will put a breakfast.
Was it? I mean,
yeah.
No.
One of the days it is.
One of the days, yeah.
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 Really?
Yeah. So my question on this trip was if Commissioner McKenna was attending and if you all wanted to be at the same hotel or not. At this point, we were looking like we're separating the Mayflower and the Beacon.
They're about two blocks apart, so.
Yeah, they're close. I prefer the Mayflower.
Okay.
I think on this one I would too.
The Mayflower? Okay.
And I'll just stay at the Beacon. Because that way I can just go downstairs for breakfast. It's lazy.
All right.
be three. That'd be great.
Yep.
Is there anything else for right now?
We're pretty. That's pretty clear. We're set, aren't we?
I think we are.
Maybe we just. Maybe we don't need to.
For a while.
Why wouldn't
for a while.
That.
No. I mean, for the things that you have to.
She's
do,
grabbing
you
her heart cavity.
You can miss me for December.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah, I think we can. Yeah.
Okay. And Commissioner Congdon, can I get your expense book today?
Yep.
Just a quick question on your January and February meetings, the hotel reservations. Are you planning them for Wednesday and Thursday night? You've got, it would be two nights each.
So I would plan, I don't know what days these are. I would assume you'd be checking in the night before the 13th.
Let me take a look.
Wednesday's the 15th.
January 10th is a Wednesday. That's when we would be going over general, because the meetings generally start at noon on Wednesday.
Okay. So
and I
two
think
nights, 10th and 11th?
The ninth of the 10th and 11th.
Okay.
And
right.
The same for probably for February. Wednesday's the 14th. It would
right.
be the night of the 14th and 15th.
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct. Good catch.
So, Commissioner Conlon, I've just been looking on the website. I think this is the last in the series for APPA. I know
really?
They did one in the east, and it looks like they've got one in the west. And I'll forward you the link to the event and what it is that they're doing there.
Will there be a method to keep us better informed going forward now?
Well, that one I'm not sure of, because you're getting those notices directly from APPA. They're not coming from us. So,
okay.
I think we can definitely have a note to check to see if we've got Mr. Conga's name spelled incorrectly, but what we can do about that.
That was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, thinking that you might become a board member of APPA.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
I wonder what you were doing.
It's always worth checking out.
You bet.
Okay, well, right. Let me know if there's anything else I can help you with, and I will work on the reservations we talked about today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks.
Do we want to do commissioner items now? It's 5 till, or does anybody have any items?
I don't have any items.
I don't remember if we reported. When was Energy Northwest? Was it before the last meet? We haven't had a meeting since Energy Northwest meeting.
No.
There was a speaker there, and I do not remember his name.
First speaker?
Yeah, made my head hurt.
Last name was Hill.
So we'll do these.
And,
business.
I don't see Greg in the room anymore, but one of the premises that he laid out for the group was that U.S.'s reliance on fossil fuel was not over, would not be over anytime soon, based on the cost of building batteries. And the cost and environmental degradation of building batteries. And the other, there was two big takeaways in my head. The other one being that we have not yet seen full, quote, energy recovery from the recession of 2008. And that the lag time between when consumers and industries start really cranking back up utilizing energy, we're just now approaching that moment in time when we might really truly see full results of recovery from the recession. So what that means going forward, I don't know. I don't know if you were in the room for any part of that or not.
A portion of it. And I would offer you a couple of thoughts in terms of how I think that's relevant for us. So first of all, our expected value in terms of revenues has come down dramatically since
mm-hmm.
we finished the strategic plan. But there is always a range around that. And I think one of the things that we've learned certainly is that you should never trust the current forecast, that it could be lower and it could be higher. We're in a downswing, and whenever there's a downswing, the prevailing wisdom is it will just keep going down further and further, and then something happens and it goes up. And basically he was laying out the case for why it might go up. That's
yeah.
the scenario for how you could get higher revenues. And I think that's relevant for us in particular as we think about public power benefit. at the time we put the strategic plan together, we were thinking that we would have substantially high revenues and we would be figuring out how to invest in the county, and we don't think that anymore, not based on our expected value forecast. But the possibility of that occurring is still there. That's what basically he was arguing, is that you could have higher fossil fuel prices, which leads to higher revenues for us ultimately. And I think it's the argument for why to maintain a public power benefit program, because the idea was to create infrastructure so that if we found ourselves in that situation, we'd have the capability to be able to address what would we do if we had higher revenues. The second thought I would offer you is I just think that there's going to be an interesting conversation at your November meeting, because the public generating pool, study will come forward, and it will look at some of the issues and questions around what's the future for a variety of renewables and natural gas and a variety of those kinds of options. And I think there'll be an important discussion there that you all will be a part of, and that is useful background for that discussion as well.
And that,
I'm sorry, the November meeting?
Yes. Yes.
That's the November meeting.
And that will be at the board meeting, not the energy committee. It will be at the board meeting on Friday.
Oh.
Talk with George a couple days ago.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Any other commissioner items at this point? Let's recess and come back at 1 o'clock for our budget hearing. Ready? Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to the afternoon session of the November 6, 2017 Chelan County PUD Commission meeting. We will start this afternoon with a public hearing for our 2018 preliminary budget presentation. And for the conductive business, I will turn it over to Steve Wright.
Okay, just a reminder, this is the third in a series of steps to talk about the budget. We've already gone through five-year business plans and then applied those from a big picture perspective to 2018. Now what we'll be doing is going into the specifics around the 2018 preliminary budget. I want to welcome Craig Coons, Deborah Vaughn to the table, who are going to be making today's presentation.
All right. Welcome to the first of two public hearings on the 2018 budget. I'm Craig Coons, Senior Strategic Financial Planning Analyst. As Steve mentioned, this is Deborah Vaughn. And we are going to cover timelines, goals and initiatives, preliminary results and highlights, touch base on human resources, and finally go over next steps. There's no board action required today. And I would like to point out that the strategic facilities plan is not reflected in this preliminary budget, but will be reflected in the presentation on the 20th, the next budget hearing. This slide shows the timeline. We initiated the budget process in September when the business plans were finalized. The recent focus has been on establishing the department spending budgets and corporate budget details for 2018. And that leads us here, the first of two public hearings. We will wrap up the budgeting process request of formal approval on December 4th. The business plans were presented to the board on October 2nd and are the key building block for the 2018 budget. The foundation of the plans and the budget is at the top of our balanced scorecard, customer owner satisfaction. Our business plans and budget are developed around the strategic plan goals, which our highest priority is reinvesting in assets and people, followed by debt reduction and continuation of the public power benefit. All right, now the fun part. We're getting to the numbers.
Oh, perspective is an interesting thing, isn't it?
Okay. This slide is a high-level, bottom-line comparison. Where we were last year, looking at the five-year forecast and plan compared to where we are now. Currently, we're our $35 million improvement to our bottom line over the 2017 through 2021 timeframe. I would note that the primary driver is the 2017 results that Kelly discussed earlier today. In that five-year window, our revenue is up about $30 million, and that's driven primarily to an increase in our cost-plus contracts. while our expenses are down $5 million over that time frame as well. Moving on to liquidity, there's a lot of moving parts in our liquidity calculation, but there's two major primary drivers, and that's the $35 million improvement to our bottom line that I just talked to previously, as well as an additional capital spending of $40 million increase in the 2017 through 21 timeframe. Taking all those moving parts together, we're basically in the same position in 2021 as we were saying last year at this time. The increase in our bottom line forecast and increased capital spending puts our liquidity right in track to where it was last year at this time, in 2021. As far as debt reduction, our plan is relatively inconsistent where it was last year. I would note that $61 million of our $85 million debt reduction plan for 2018 is optional, as well as $61 million of the $86 million for 2019. We're in the process right now of trying to find the right balance in our debt reduction plan, because we have significant capital investments going on, particularly at the hydros, and we're working on fine-tuning those plans. And we will be back in November on the 20th to discuss that in a little more depth as we refine those plans. The optional accelerated debt payments are subject to change. And I would note, regardless of how those changes, our preliminary work is showing that we're going to achieve our 35% debt ratio target in 2019, regardless of whether the accelerated plans change or not.
That $61 million in both of those years, is that an all-or-none proposition? Here.
It's not an all or none. There's various components of it.
Okay.
Okay. This is a five-year snapshot of our current forecast with 2018 preliminary budget highlighted in gray. It's a high-level view, but I would note that our bottom line is currently projected at $71.5 million, which is a little bit better than what we were communicating at the business plan. About $1.5 million better than what we were saying 2018 would be at the business plan timeline. And I'll get into further discussion in detail on all the various components. This is looking at our 2018 budget compared to our 2017 budget. I would note that our bottom line is showing about a $14 million decrease from last year. And there's two major drivers to that. One is the wholesale market decline we've seen in the wholesale market, which is affecting our net wholesale revenue. And the other is we have a planned spike in our operating costs, particularly due around all the work we're doing at the hydros, Rock Island and Rocky Reach, and some work at Lake Chelan. Reviewing our service revenue budget, there's a slight increase over 2017. We assume about a 2% growth in electric growth net of conservation, and 2.5% load growth for water and wastewater, respectively. There is no electric rate increase in the 2018 budget, but we do reflect a 2% increase in water rates and a 5% increase in wastewater rates following the multi-year plan approved by the board in 2015. And as I mentioned earlier, our net surplus revenue is $7 million lower than last year's adopted budget, and that's primarily driven to the lower wholesale market. The current preliminary budget for net surplus energy revenue is right in line with where we thought would be what we were projecting for the 2018-22 business plans. Looking at other operating revenues, they are pretty much consistent with our 2017 adopted budget. I would note that the transmission and wheeling is a cost-based contract, so as our costs increase from reinvestment in our assets and compliance, that is offset by the equal increase in our revenues because it's a cost-based revenue component. All right, I'm going to focus on some 2018 major O&M projects. You'll see a lot of projects for capital and O&M, particularly at the hydros. We have work going on at Rocky Reach. We're winding down the stator repairs, but we're still working on our turbine repairs. We've got about $6 million on that, and we still have three left to do. Some other major projects at the hydros that are pretty significant are the Powerhouse 2 draft tube gate refurbishment and the Lake Chelan surge tank work.
Craig, may I ask a question, please?
Of course.
On the turbine repairs, there's three left to go. Is there a back of the envelope calculation in terms of approximately what each one of those are going to cost?
I'm hesitant to give you a back of an envelope number without knowing for certain, but I'd be happy to get to you right after this meeting.
All right.
So looking at operating expenses, you can see the increase in our hydro O&M, and that's driven in part to the draft tube work and the Lakeland surge tank work we're going to be doing. We'll also be performing some investment activity at the visitor center for upgrades in conjunction with the public power benefit program. We have increased reinvestment activity in our distribution assets. And we continue to fine-tune our fiber network O&M and capital budget, as there's some projects that are both capital and O&M. We can continue to move back and forth on those, fine-tune that.
Question on terminology.
Okay.
Draft tube. Is that the penstock that comes down from the dam to the powerhouse?
I'll let Kirk Hudson explain that one.
Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. The draft tube is the water passageway after it leaves the turbine. So in our hydro projects, it's the tail race side of the dam. There's a hydraulic structure there to keep the water flowing efficiently immediately after the turbine out into the tail race. And in this particular case, the draft tube gate project that Craig was talking about at Rock Island Powerhouse 2, that powerhouse is configured differently from the others, so you can actually sluice water. You can actually pass water through the turbines without generating. And we've had a number of wheels on the draft tube gates themselves that have worn down, and so we've had to refurbish those gates so that we can provide that sluicing capability.
Hey, thank you. Hope I'm not the only one that didn't know what a draft tube was.
Thank you, Kirk.
I was only going to tease you.
Moving on operating expenses, you will see an increase in the conservation expenditures, and I'll explain that in a little more detail. Similar to our capital investments, we receive benefit over a longer life. So like when we have a capital asset and we depreciate it, we do the same thing with our conservation efforts. We capitalize it and amortize it over a useful life. So this isn't necessarily an increase in expenditures for the current year conservation efforts. It's actually a recognition of prior expenditures, another year of prior year's expenditures being recognized, another layer of that. Oh, I will highlight other admin in general. We've seen an increase in that, and that's driven primarily by there's a focus on the district-wide technology efforts and a concerted effort on cybersecurity. We have some additional computer and software fees. Looking at non-operating activity, a couple items of note. Our investment earnings are budgeted a little higher than prior year, and that's due primarily to increased interest rate assumptions. And our interest expense is lower than last year's budget as we continue our debt reduction strategy. Now moving on to our capital program. Have you seen, and you'll continue to see in this presentation, we have a lot on our plate, particularly at the hydros, laid the capital. Some of those major efforts are the Rock Island modernization, in particular B1 through B4 and B5 through B8. And these efforts alone for 2018 are about $70 million of our capital budget. Substantial investments. In addition to the modernization, we also have crane work going on at the hydros, specifically the bridge crane and the gantry crane at Rock Island, as well as we're wrapping up the work for the gantry crane and the bridge cranes at Rocky Reach. And we have some other major capital projects out there at the hydros. We have the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 governor controls for U1, U8. We have the Rock Island Powerhouse 1 domestic water, the Rocky Beach fire alarm system, and the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 storage building. Looking at some non-hydro 28 major capital projects, we have the customer information system, which has about has $3.5 million placeholder for 2018. I would note that the final total project cost expectations is pending further evaluation and will be adjusted upon final negotiations. We also have the Peshawestin wastewater upgrade. We have telecommunication replacements and upgrades slated for 2018, including the land mobile radio network of about $5 million. We have work related to substations, and we are continuing the fiber expansion with the public power benefit, and that has $2.5 million funded for 2018. Again, there's a lot of work on our plate for 2018,
yeah,
with significant work at the hydros leading the forefront. Continuing on with capital projects, the board approves two things annually, the total project and the annual budget for the year. We manage to both those amounts. This is a list of existing projects that need adjustments or new proposals for the 2018 year. And a good example for a project that needs adjustment is the Powerhouse 2 storage building, which is being revised to mirror the strategic facilities plan standards. And I would note that a full capital project report showing both the annual and the total project costs for each project will be provided to the board as part of the budget resolution documentation. Okay, so I covered a lot of the major projects, and this is looking at a side-by-side comparison between the preliminary 2018 budget and the 2017 adopted budget. And again, I want to highlight the Rock Island Hydro amount is nearly $30 million above the 2017 budget, because we have all those projects that I was talking about. Those are just the highlighted ones, significant investments out there. And there are corporate and shared assets. We have the CIS and the land mobile radio network and some slight facilities upgrades. And that was integrated electric. Continuing on in fiber, we continue the public power benefit expansion and upgrades. The water system has a tank replacement at Wenatchee Heights, and wastewater has the Peshawestin system upgrades. So taking all that into consideration, we're looking at roughly $128 million in net capital and budget compared to the $96 million in 2017. But the preliminary budget is pretty much right in line with our 2018-22 business plan estimate of $126 million.
When's the last time our capital budget got that high? I mean, this is a big year coming up for us.
I want to say it was when we did the fish bypass system, because that was such a significant investment. So that would have been 15 years ago.
Been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
You got a lot on your plate.
There's tons on the plate. Okay, I'm going to transition away from the detailed numbers, even though I love it, just for a moment. And we'll discuss some new positions in the 2018 budget. As I mentioned earlier, there's a focus on technology, in particular cybersecurity, and with it comes two network security administrators and a system administrator. We also have the customer information system project, and with that comes a project manager in the 2018 budget. Under construction and project management, we have two student engineers and one electrical engineer.
Just want to point out those students are to support the new Bachelor of Applied Engineering program at WVC.
Oh, cool.
That's where we're looking to bring
good.
Them in from.
Cool.
Very good.
We have five positions that fall under the reinvest service level areas, two journeyman wiremen, one customer service engineer, one field engineer, and one communications lineman. And lastly, we have a meter man in the 2018 budget as a matter of succession planning. Reviewing market pay trends. In general, all industry and utility wages are experiencing slow but predictable growth, but the utility industry wages are growing faster than the general industry. Final pay increase and structural growth decisions will be made in January when additional data will be available to validate our assumptions. Speaking of assumptions, in our 2018 budget for non-bargaining unit labor, the 2.6 merit and the 0.5 market adjustment assumption are the same as last year's budget. And again, I would note that these assumptions will be subject to further data validation and review before the pay pool increase is determined. For the bargaining unit, the current collective bargaining agreement expires in March 2018, and the wages will be negotiated. Reviewing key employer benefit costs, we see the continued trend in increased medical costs. We also see an increase in PERS, which is driven by state legislation and actuarial assumptions. And we also see an increase in the 401A costs, and that's due to increased employee participation and the related matching that goes along with it. Okay, so when you take all those things together, the O&M and the capital, this is a comparison of the adopted 2017 budget with the preliminary 2018 budget. And as highlighted throughout, the primary driver of the increased budget to budget is the significant volume of work at the hydros, in particular the capital investments out at Rock Island. So looking at our snapshot of our combined financial policies based on the 2018 preliminary budget under both the expected and unusual cases, as noted by the green track check mark, the district is on track. And the business line policies for water, wastewater, and fiber are also on track for 2018. And then I'll touch briefly on the test metrics. Kelly expanded on this a little more detail this morning in the quarterly update. You can see the two metrics are highlighted in yellow. And these metrics are showing results that are slightly less than our established targets. And they're in general, they're looking at how much our rates cover our costs and how much we were relying on the wholesale market to cover the gap. And when we look at these two together, this is just focused on 2018, it's suggesting that our electric rates are not keeping up with our growth and expenses, operation, maintenance, and taxes as we continue to make such significant investments in our assets. And the amount we're relying on the net wholesale revenue is growing. Again, this is only looking at 2018, as it was shown in the Q3 update earlier today. It flip-flops back and forth. I mean, it's right at the metrics, and depending on the trends and stuff, it goes back and forth. So it's just something to keep our eye on. But it is showing some early indication that there is some pressure on our electric rates if you just focus solely on 2018. So to recap, knowing that the highest priority is reinvesting in assets and people, we see significant investments in 2018, particularly in the hydro facilities. We do see declining revenue forecasts due to the changing power markets, and we have no planned 2018 electric rate increases. But long-term sustainability without electric rate increases is unlikely. And I'll pause there for questions and comments.
Commissioners? Questions, comments? Significant change in two budgets.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot going on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nope. Thank you.
So next steps. We'll continue to review and make adjustments through November. would note that the strategic facilities plan and debt plan discussions will be incorporated into the budget and forecast, and those will be discussed at the second budget hearing on November 20th, and we'll be requesting board approval on December 4th.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Good presentation. Thank you.
Yes, it was. Sure. Very good.
So, Deborah, you must be the silent partner today.
I am.
All right. Thank you.
And I'll get back to your question, Mr. Commissioner Bowles. I'll get back to your question today.
That'd be great. Thanks. And it doesn't have to be today, but when it's convenient for you. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Follow up on delegation of action items from the previous board meeting?
There were none.
Delegation of action items from today?
So we want to get back to you on the value of 55 megawatts associated with the Canadian entitlement at today's market prices, and then the estimation of the cost for the three remaining turbines, C9 through 11, actually.
Okay. Is there any additional public comment? I don't see any members of the public here at the moment, I don't believe. Commissioners, under other such matters, we have a need to set two special meetings, actually.
We need to set one for next Monday evening at 5:30 p.m. at Tijuana's Mexican Restaurant for the Mid-Sea Commissioners Managers, and then one for November 14th, 6:30 p.m. at the Orondo School District. So who would care to make a motion?
We all have those in front of us, copies. I'll take the first one, move to set a special meeting to be held on Monday, November 13th, 2017 at 5:30 p.m. at Tijuana's Mexican Restaurant, 709 First Avenue, Southeast, Quincy, Washington, for the purpose of a Mid-Sea Commissioners Managers meeting.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to set a special meeting for next Monday, the 13th. Is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. We have another one.
Mr. Chairman, I move to set a special meeting to be held on Tuesday, November 14th at 6:30 p.m. at the Orondo School District Building. That's on 100 Orondo School Road for the purpose of discussing the Orondo Park future operations.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded to set another special meeting on November 14th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you. Commissioners, we have need for an executive session. About how long will that session be?
I'd like to set it for 90 minutes, please.
Okay. We have need to have a 90-minute executive session to discuss with legal counsel, agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCWs, and to consider matters affecting national security as authorized by the RCWs, and to consider information regarding the infrastructure and security of computer and telecommunications networks, security and service recovery plans, security risk assessments, and security test results to the extent that they identify specific system vulnerabilities pursuant to the RCWs. And I don't know that we need a break before we do that. So why don't we just move right into an executive session then? We are coming out of executive session. It is currently about 7 minutes to three. In executive session, no votes were taken, no decisions were made. Is there any other business to come before the commission?
So we will recess and reconvene.
Thank you. That is, we will now recess and reconvene at 5:30 p.m. at the Confluence Technology Center. Reconvene the meeting, the Chelan Public Utility District, the November 6th meeting. We met this morning and this afternoon and recessed the meeting to reconvene so we would make it a more convenient time for the last item on the agenda, and that is the North Shore substation. As I do in every meeting, I'd like to remind people, if they have their cell phones on them, if you could silence your cell phone, we would really appreciate it. That helps in the conduct of meetings. And additionally, if you wish to address the board at any moment in time, we ask that you come to the microphone that's provided up here. Give us your name and address for the record. We are recording this meeting, and so it will be on the record in perpetuity. This morning, my intention was at the beginning of our meeting to do something that I don't normally do, and I thought more about it today, and I really want to do it. There's a lot of staff here and a number of the residents of the public. Yesterday, there was a horrific event in San Antonio, Texas, and I'd like to just take a moment to pause, a moment of silence to remember those that have died, and remember that we work hard in this country for a civil society that is free of fear, and we need all of us to do our best to work on that behalf of maintaining that civil society. So just a moment of silence. Thank you. So tonight we're going to talk just about one item, and that's the North Shore substation and the latest updates and the order of business this evening that we have laid out. The staff does have a presentation to make for everybody. After that staff presentation, would like to invite public comment. I would ask in that process, we've had a lot of public comment over the last two-plus years, and I think that I can speak for the rest of the board that we have truly heard all of that comment. So if you can try to keep your comments to those things that are new or that you really feel need reinforcing, we would appreciate that. After the public comment, I'm going to ask our attorney, Eric Walquist, to provide his guidance and counsel to the board, and then I'm going to turn to the board and ask them for their comments and their thoughts. So with that, I will turn it over to Steve Wright.
Okay, thank you. So we spent a lot of time taking public comment, and including a great deal of time a couple of weeks ago in Chelan, and we felt that there was a commitment that we needed to make sure that we responded to the public comment that we've heard. So last Friday, we provided a written response to the comments that had come up throughout the course of the proceeding, and particularly those that were new that came up in that session. I'm going to take a few moments to summarize not all of that, but the ones that seem particularly new and important. First, the issue came up about why does the PUD only seek willing property sellers. Fundamentally, it's about we do have the authority to use eminent domain to acquire properties, but we try to not do that whenever possible. It's a costly process. It's a timely process. It's a controversial process to go down that path. So our preference is to seek willing property sellers, and in this case, we have found a couple that are willing. Second, coming out of that meeting, certainly we heard a lot of concern about selecting the Henderson property or the Hellier property, and we heard some options that folks asked us to consider as alternatives to that. So the morning after that meeting, we sat down as a staff and went back and said, so what are those options? Let's make sure that we understand them. And we did look at alternatives at both Henderson and Hellier. I want to invite Gary Rice to come up for a moment, if he could, and talk about the work that we did there, what those options look like.
You probably want the mic here or that one there.
Yep, we're going to bring up the maps here. And so Gary put some maps together and looked at a couple of new alternatives.
Yeah, what you're looking at right now is the Henderson site. And what we looked at on the Henderson site, the comments that came in were Mr. Henderson has a lot of property. Have you looked at any of his other property? And what I have shown here in blue with the square and then the distribution line leading down, that's actually a location that was proposed by the part of the Chelan Hills group and quite some time back. And the reason we didn't look at it earlier was that it wasn't offered to us. But since that comment kept coming back up, we went ahead and did an analysis on that. This is a fairly high-level analysis, but it's in line with the accuracy of the other analysis we've done. What you see that I've drawn on are both transmission lines that we have in the area, the lower the Chelan-Manson line, the upper the Chelan-Wapato line. So specifically with this site, what was asked is, why don't you see about bringing the transmission line down from the upper site that won't affect as many people and then put the substation back out of the way, away from some of the population. And in doing so, what I did is I've got a couple tools available. One, the county assessor maps. I can look and see which parcels are up there. And I can also look and see whether there's houses built on them or not. So it's a little hard to see from this view, but if you look just above the yellow line, the upper Chelan Wapato line, you'll see a couple squares up there, or about five squares, six maybe. And what those are is actually houses and they do have a view of the lake. I've also got a Google Earth tool where I can move around, and I can put myself virtually behind those houses and look forward, and I can see whether or not they would be impacted by view of that transmission line. I actually zoomed in and looked to draw those lines on there. I could follow and actually find the poles. So by moving up there, not focusing just on cost but on views, the view impacts actually went up. And due to the existing residences that are up there, the transmission line would be in view of the lake from their perspective, as well as the substation site there. So, and then we also looked at the cost. And the component of cost for that is simply what you see in blue right there. The lower blue square you see by the Chelan-Wapato or Chelan-Manson line, the lower line, that's the proposed Henderson site. The one in the middle is the virtual site north of the road that we're looking at. So all of the blue lines you see there, the square above, and then also the blue line, that's the substation site and the buried transmission or buried distribution. So it was easy to do a cost analysis. These are just additional features or items that we would add. For coming up with the basis of cost, I use the same spreadsheets for the cost that we have with from HDR consulting firm, and we have a cost per line mile, and also from the upper line, just to let everyone know, I use the same cost per foot that we had on the Hellier site for the original pathway. So at that point, it was just getting distances and coming up with costs. It's about $1.6 million more for this option. And it wasn't offered to us as a piece of property. We just wanted to go ahead and do that analysis. The view impacts do go down, the number of view impacts, but the lake view impacts go up. So that's one analysis we did on the Hellier site. We also briefly looked at one site. It's fairly close in proximity, just not very far up Henderson Hill beyond where the original site is, but back around the hill back on the corner. There's a little pocket back there. And we didn't go very far on that one, just realizing that we would have to build a transmission line into it and a transmission line out, which would put two transmission lines at a higher elevation back to feed that substation. Basically, every time we move away from a transmission line, we do increase visual impacts and increase costs. So we just wanted to vet this one out because so many questions have been asked about it. Can you move to the next slide? Maybe it's two previous. Okay, that one right there. This is the Hellier site, and what we have shown in the dark blue line is the transmission line that was originally proposed to go down the roadway to the Hellier site, and then the blue box you see there at the end of that dark blue line, that's the Hellier site itself, this substation site. We also had an alternate on our original analysis, the light blue line going around the backside of the hill there. That added, I think, about $290,000 to the cost. It was just another route that we had in there. And the yellow line that you see is the upper transmission line. That is the Chelan-Wapato line. And what the question was specifically regarding Hellier was, could you put a transmission line on a back route and that would connect with that upper transmission line and be out of people's view impact? So we looked at that. That's the orange line you see. There's a fork in it. We could do either path. They're about the same distance, about the same cost. Just wanted to show that we looked at a couple different routings. We just costed it one way because the costs are about the same. But what this one did was show that there's several people that have built up in the hills that would be looking at that back route of the transmission line. And, in fact, it's actually more of a view impact than the line going down the road from the number of properties that would actually see the new transmission line. The costs weren't that much different. I think on an earlier slide, maybe we said it was $170,000, but that math was wrong. It's $130,000. It was a Scrivener's error. So with this one, the point to be made is from this perspective on Google Earth, you can see that there are several residents built, even though rural, they would still have a view of that transmission line. So that was the second request that we had to take a look at that.
Okay, thank you, Gary. I think the bottom line is all of us that walked away from that last meeting felt a lot of empathy for the people in the room who felt that they were going to be impacted by the line, and we were Is there another alternative here that could work that we hadn't thought through? And even with this additional work and working with a representative from the Homeowners Association to see whether there were any other alternatives, our conclusion was we couldn't find another one that lessened the impact, either from a view impact or from a cost impact. So it led us back to the original two sites that we were working with. Likes to double up there. So next up, we particularly in the written comments, we heard a number of concerns about transmission lines and impacts from transmission lines. As we reviewed this and the option, I think it becomes clear that the option that we're looking at has the least impact in terms of views because we're talking about only a tenth of a mile of transmission and no overhead distribution. We also got quite a few comments in the last week or two, I think in part because of the fires in California, about the risk of either damage as a result of fires to transmission lines or of transmission creating fire risk. In either case, the option that we're looking at creates the least risk from wildfire or risk of creating wildfire of any of the options that we studied because it has the least overhead transmission and distribution associated with it. We got a couple of comments about the fact that the PUD is doing well right now. Financially is healthy and therefore can afford to underground transmission. I think it's important to understand the PUD has gone through a series of cycles. The early 2000s were not very good years. The last few years have been very good financial years, and what we forecast for the 2020s is, not very good years. We mostly make money from wholesale sales. About 80% of our revenue comes from wholesale sales. Prices have been very good the last few years but have been declining and are forecasted to stay low through the 2020s. As a result of the shale gas revolution and the large amounts of wind and solar that are coming onto the Western power system. So the commitment that I know that the board has made and has made it clear to us as staff is that while we are financially healthy, we don't believe that should lead to making non-cost-effective decisions. Our goal is to run the place as efficiently as we can. And so we are very clear that we should be seeking out to, in any decision that we make with respect to any of the PUD operations, find the most cost-effective alternatives. We received a comment, in fact, a few comments with respect to relationship to our facilities plan. It's important to understand we do have a lot of facilities. We have more than 100 buildings that we operate, and it represents about 16% of our total assets, so it's a significant component of PUD operations. We have buildings both to house equipment and we have buildings to house people. Both of them require maintenance and in some cases we need new buildings. What we have done as a result of our strategic plan, our overall strategic plan, which said we should focus on managing our assets to create the best value for the people of the county over the long term, is develop a strategic facilities plan that looks at all of our buildings and tries to find the least cost path for operating those assets over the long term so that we'll have the lowest cost and therefore the lowest rate impact from the operation of those assets. So that plan has been developed, been presented to the board. In the course of developing the plan, we engaged a customer group that had a number of community members from across the county that participated in it. The recommendation of the plan is that we can it would make sense, at least based on the assumptions in the plan at this point, to invest in new buildings, that would create the least cost path. But that plan will be tested through an RFP process where we're going out and looking at doing the design work and actually making decisions about, in fact, do individual buildings make sense and are they cost effective for ratepayers. The plan was endorsed by the community group that we worked with. So the fundamental difference here is that the facilities plan is one in which we are pursuing all the cost-effective options, the one that create least costs for ratepayers across the county. So we got some comments that looked at the three big criteria that we used, cost, reliability, operational issues, and aesthetic impacts, and focused on a category and said, well, on this category, it looks like one option or the other is better, and the decision, therefore, should be made on the basis of that. And we just wanted to make clear that we looked at all three categories and had to balance across all three, cost, reliability, operations, and aesthetics. And that on the basis of that, we concluded that the best alternative was the Henderson alternative. With respect to specifically on aesthetics, that one's a tough one to deal with because while we had many impacts, view impacts, in the Henderson scenario, more than in the Hellier case, we have more opportunities to mitigate those impacts at the Henderson property than at the Hellier property because they're mostly substation view impacts, which we can do something about. Much harder to deal with the mitigation of the impacts associated with a transmission line. We looked at the question of residents being willing to pay for the additional costs associated with undergrounding. I will say that earlier in this process, we had some undergrounding options that were in the hundreds of thousands of dollar range. And at that point, I would say it seemed more feasible that an approach that we describe as the LUD, the method for being able to have residents pay for unique costs on the system, seemed more feasible. With undergrounding, we're looking at a $4 to $8 million cost, and we priced that out over the life of facility, a roughly 30-year period that we would look for return on an investment, and concluded that if you spread that cost across the most likely range of folks that would pay, in this case, we assumed it would be across all the people who benefit from the substation, roughly 1,500 meters that are in that area, that the cost of that would roughly work out to be about a 25 to 45% increase. And the range there is due to the range of undergrounding, the $4 million cost versus the $8 million cost of undergrounding. And even that, those numbers do not include the additional cost of choosing the Hellier option versus the Henderson option. Recall that the Hellier option costs about $2 million more than the Henderson option. So this is just the cost of undergrounding. And earlier in this process, at the last public meeting, and this is part of the staff recommendation, we said we don't believe it's financially feasible. This is really the math behind the determination of financially feasible. This struck us as an extraordinary amount of a rate increase, it would be very difficult to put in place. So for that reason, we concluded it was not financially feasible to make it work. We received a comment about making sure that all comments, including those that come into commissioners, are placed on the PUD's website. So we did a search working with the commissioners to make sure that we had all of the comments. We believe at this point we do have them, and they have all been included on the public comment page. So that takes us up to where we were on Friday. Again, coming out of the public meeting, we made a commitment that we felt that it was our responsibility to not just hear public comment, but to respond to public comment. So we put together a document that identified all the public comment that we heard and then translated that with responses and released that on Friday. Subsequent to the release of that, we got two additional letters. The first is from the Lake Chelan Hills Homeowners Association Board of Trustees. Won't go through the whole letter, but just note the points that are in bold up on the screen. The Homeowners Association advises us that they will support the staff recommendation for the Henderson site with the following PUD commitments. They requested that the PUD recognize the challenges the site poses and work to support the affected homeowners and the Homeowners Association representatives in the design phase of the substation project. They identified seven things that they felt were important for us to address. I won't take your time to identify all of those here, just to say that those are things that, as staff at least, we are prepared to commit that those are things that we can work on. They are opportunities for us to be able to work together with the folks there, we think that there is a good opportunity to be able to come to a collaborative solution. Subsequent to that, we got another letter from the Henderson Neighborhood Protection Group, which raised a number of concerns. Henderson location, they felt that it would irreversibly damage the neighborhood character. that the location could materially and adversely impact wildlife and also could impact and contaminate existing wells, that the location could create driving hazards for PUD personnel, and that the public comments received to date were overwhelmingly opposed to the selection of the Henderson location, and that a CEPA review is required. Our perspective on that is that, in particular, with respect to the CEPA review, that there are opportunities to be able to address these concerns as we move forward in the process, and that we can continue to work with the community on making sure that the issues that are raised can be addressed. So with that, Mr. President, that summarizes the comments that we have heard today, and I turn it back over to you.
You bet. So at this time, I would open the floor to public comment, and as I requested before, if you would come up to use the microphone and state your name and address for the record, would appreciate it.
Good afternoon. My name is Alex Thomason, and I was the author of that letter, so it's probably appropriate that I come first. My address is P.O. Box 637, Pateras, Washington. So I'll just incorporate by reference my letter. I may reference it in a couple points. I would also request that I have a total of 5 minutes. I might take less than that, but that way I won't have other people speak. It'll just be me, if that's okay. There were a couple facts that I wanted to bring up, a couple cost projections that I believe are not complete that I'd like the commissioners to consider. The first is that it appears that Mr. Henderson is requiring the PD to purchase a second parcel of property. We'd like to know what is the cost of that property, leaving aside the legality of whether or not the PUD can purchase investment property, turn around and resell it, but what is the estimated resale value? So in other words, those are costs that were backed out of the Henderson acquisition, but those are actually costs that the PUD is going to incur. So we'd like to know what are the projected investment return on that in order to understand the actual costs. Number two, what are the estimated costs to expand the current access road? The Henderson Road will need to be expanded to do so. Number three, what are the expected easement acquisition costs to expand that road in order to bring in the construction, in order to bring in everything for that substation? All those costs we would submit need to be factored into the acquisition itself. Number four, how much cash has the PUD reserved for payments to the owners whose property has been diminished in value? In other words, there might be plaintiffs who would bring diminished in value claims. These are homeowners who purchased property with the expectation that it was a view property, it was a lake property, and now that investment property or home property, as the case may be, if they've lived there for 20-plus years, has now substantially been decreased. So the question is whether or not there's been a cash reserve to compensate people for the diminution value. I understand whether or not the concerns that were addressed in our letter relating to CEPA are – we believe that there are a number of factors that must be addressed, and part of the case that I cited in my letter, I believe, is instructive. It states that the reason why CEPA is required, or an environmental impact statement is required, which costs generally $250,000 to $2 million, pretty average study, is because virtually government approval of land use proposal may otherwise be virtually unstoppable. It creates this administrative inertia. And so in lieu of purchasing property, and then we find out, oh, my goodness, this EIS says that we can't go forward because of the following factors. In lieu of buying property and then backing out, I would submit it makes more sense to consider all these other yet unforeseen costs. Another important factor is the party that submitted the cost of the underground versus the above-ground cost. This was just their general, looks like a brochure type stuff. It wasn't specific to this site, and so it seems very difficult to determine whether or not what are the costs for this location, because the topography, it appears there wasn't an actual estimate. So I would submit that it might make sense to have them, if they're going to do the work, have them come here and give you a bid on both sites as to above ground and underground. It's the equivalent of asking a lawyer, what's this lawsuit going to cost? And they say, well, how much money do you have? And that's apparently what this looks like, too. It looks like the bid was a way to make sure that they didn't actually, you know, come in with a low bid, and then they come up with a substantially higher bid. The other issue is that the Henderson location is a short-term fix. If you look at where the development progress in the Chelan-Manson area is moving, it's clearly moving up lake. And this particular, the Henderson site is actually in the middle of that development. In lieu of being on the leading edge, which is the Hellier site is, we have in the Hellier site, obviously it's been well documented that we have an excited seller who's excited about seeing the glow and the hum of the lights, as he says. But in either event, we have a bunch of neighborhoods that are not. I would also submit that it would be appropriate to look at if we locate at the Henderson location, what costs are we going to have in order to run lines from that location upriver? What are those costs up lake? What are those costs going to be as opposed to actually simply locating the substation up lake in the first place and then not having to run the lines basically past the Hellier area? I think it's important also from the global perspective to look at who is driving the need for these the additional expansions. I would submit that it is not the people who have lived here for 30 years. It is new developers. There's approximately 7 major developments that are coming in within the Chelan area. I would submit that those developers, so as to the cost differential for putting underground lines, those developers should be the ones who are required to bear the burden of paying for the infrastructure costs that they're the ones who are putting in and benefiting from monetarily rather than the local ratepayers. And so I would submit that that would be another way that in lieu of – if there is some way where the costs are running out of control, we put those additional costs on the developers who are seeking to benefit from all that the PUD provides. I think it would be important also that the deadline that Mr. Henderson has placed on this purchase and sale agreement is an artificial deadline. It's a deadline that can be negotiated, renegotiated, and I think that as a salesman will say, it's only for today, only for today only. That makes people rush into making decisions with not all of the hidden and unknown costs that inevitably will be there, whether or not there's court involvement or not. Those are costs that are all going to be involved, and I would submit that it would behoove all of us to go through that process before we make a final decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional public comment.
Don Summers, 319 High Point Lane in Chelan. And my wife and I built our home recently in Chelan. We're fortunate that we have a beautiful view of the lake. We live down below our friends that live up on the hill, those that are going to be immediately impacted by the substation. Anyway, we're just in support of that. If the board chooses to put the substation down below them in their clear view, just wanted to reinforce the factor that we would hope that you would do your best to have the least impact on their property. The buffers you talked about, that would be encouraged as low an elevation as possible rather than raising it so that others are affected by it. And also the idea that as opposed to large security lights, some type of motion detectors would be adequate, would serve that purpose without having a constant lighting for their property. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
Additional public comment?
Gentlemen, commissioners, Madam Commissioner, yesterday, I have kind of been doing some of the legwork with your site, with your Henderson site.
Could I get your name and address?
Brian McCarty, 120 Pinnacle Place.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I keep forgetting that I'm not that tall. yesterday afternoon, I felt this wave of melancholy come over me, and it wasn't because I had watched the Seahawks play. I had just walked the site with a couple of new members to the Chelan Hills community who had no idea the impact or anything. They live right in my neighborhood. I'm probably one of the dozen to 15 houses that are going to be affected by this action. And I had arranged to meet them at 10 o'clock up there, and of course the night before the snow fell. And I, in my very capable four-wheel drive vehicle, struggled to make the turn and get up Henderson. And I immediately sat there and said to myself, oh my goodness, this is extraordinary. How would you ever be able to service this in any kind of conditions? Anyway, so I wanted to just state for the record that I do oppose this action. But there is something else here as well, and that is that I don't know that you realize the power that you wield. The power that you actually supply and the power that you wield is actually congruent. And our community, and I got into this race late, not this race, this fight, if you like, late in the game. And I am a middle child. I'm the one that always trying to get everybody to talk to each other. And anyway, to cut a long story short, I went in with that in mind. And I want to tell you that somebody at the PUD or somebody in your organization must have read something about the Napoleonic Wars, that you just get people in your enemies to start fighting with each other, and you divide and you conquer. And we as a community are now so completely split that it's absolutely amazing. We have people, I was up there and somebody actually made the statement, which I thought was ridiculous, did not hear about the Texas shooting until afterwards, but somebody actually said, did anybody bother to bring a gun? Because people have been threatened. People are no longer talking to each other. And I just wanted to say that going forward with all of this, isn't there some other way that we can mitigate some of these things? Our community is hurting from this. And anyway, I just wanted it to be said. Sorry, I'm taking up a lot of the technical time. It's an emotional thing for me as well. And I know we all want everybody to do the right thing. There is somebody's always going to be affected by it. I know that. We know all of these things. Just asking you, please, to do the right thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Kathy Branch. I am 12. I live at 335 Henderson Road. I have 6 acres of view property, 2 homes, a huge investment for myself and my husband. And I just want to remind everyone that all of us count, every one of us. And if this were coming into your backyard, it would be as important to you as it is to us. And to please consider that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Additional public comment. When we do close the public comment, I'll be asking our attorney to provide some guidance, and then we will turn to the board, and that will be the end of public comment. So I want to make sure that if people have any additional thoughts to share, that they take that opportunity now.
Corky Thorson, 63 Balsam. I didn't come here with the idea tonight of speaking at all, but I listened to everyone talk. And I want to implore the commissioners not to do this to us. This was my dream to have this property up there. The view is just beautiful. It's outstanding. You cannot get a feel for it. Gary, you cannot get a feel for it with Google Earth, and you know that. You have to be up there and look at these various sites and see what the view mitigations are. I personally wouldn't mind seeing a transmission line over here off to my site if my view is out here. It's not the same. Or as opposed to having a transmission or a substation right down here, I absolutely think that's the most horrible experience you can have. The bright light, the constant hum, the industrial feel—it's going to be horrible for us. As opposed to someone that is a mile off, looking sideways at a possible transmission line, it's not the same, guys. It's not the same thing. And if you're saying this is apples and apples, you're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. So, give this some thought. There's got to be a way to make this happen in regard to costs that are not that different. I think the costs on the Henderson side are going to be much more than you can imagine, and notwithstanding the SEPA thing. It's just, if you go up and look at the two sites, you'll see that no one is impacted by the Hilliard site. No one can see it. The lady that, who her husband was a police officer in San Francisco, he passed away, and I'm sorry about that. But her home site is a mile away. She does not look directly down the Hilliard site. David Hilliard is the only one. So give this serious thought, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Additional public comment.
Hi, Carolyn Glossinger, 490 Boyd Road. I, too, wasn't going to get up and say anything. But what I'm going to say, Dennis, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Glad you are doing better. Randy was very, very worried about you. First time we had a meeting and you weren't there, you could hear it in his voice, how concerned he was for you.
Well, that makes me think highly of Randy. Thank you.
Speaking about voice and concern, I didn't make it to the October 24th meeting. Carl came instead of me. But I have listened to the video, heard the tears in Robin and Corky's voices. I heard the tears in other people's voices over the decisions and the plans, and oh my goodness. So what I want to ask you is to really think about using the Hilliard location, because we over there are not fighting it except for the transmission lines. There is a group of people that really want them underground, and I understand your whole cost thing, but please consider what you're doing. Harm to one is harm to all. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional public comment? Seeing none, I'll close the public comment period and ask our attorney to provide us some guidance.
Sure, Commissioner. Thank you. Eric Walker, Sheriff's Counsel. Commissioners, I want to take a minute and just talk about
move your microphone.
What I've given you and what your options are, and then a little bit about what your decision is and what it isn't. So what I've given you, you have in front of you, each of you, proposed motions authorizing the general manager to exercise the options on both the Hilliard, either the Hilliard or the Henderson parcel. You are free to make those motions as they are written or proposed. You may modify them in any way that you see fit. You are, of course, not bound by them. You could exercise both of your options and make both motions and approve both. You may choose to adopt neither of the motions and not exercise the options. The options are set to expire currently as drafted by November 30 of this year, 2017. You can also choose to take more time. You can give staff direction if you feel like you need different or additional information. But I did want to be clear in any case that the motions as presented and your action are merely actions to acquire real property. They are not commitments in any way to the final design or siting of the substation, whether that be on the Hilliard site or the Henderson site or some other site. It also does not preclude the continuing engagement with stakeholders to help identify and address concerns that they may have, mitigate those concerns to the extent feasible. And it doesn't eliminate any option that would be reasonably available to the district to address those concerns, whether they be stakeholder concerns of aesthetics, environmental concerns, or otherwise. To make that point clear as we've moved forward, I've actually included that statement in the proposed motions so that the stakeholders out there have those reasonably available options on the table. This has been a unique process from my perspective of community engagement on property acquisition selection for potential substation. For all of the time that I've been working for and with this PUD, which is about 21 years now, we have typically purchased ahead of need in some fashion without a great deal of community input about feasibility of sites and preliminary concerns expressed and addressed. We have typically acquired the property without that and then engaged that process through the environmental review, the design, the site analysis, and the conditional use permitting process. The fact that we have engaged that process so that we knew we would buy a site that was feasible and we would have a good handle on what those concerns are before we procured the site does not preclude all of that effort continuing. In fact, I would submit to you that it will be required to continue as we move through the review and permitting process. So if you do elect to purchase either or both of the sites that are currently available to you by option, the next step would be for our team to develop and evaluate some more detailed design alternative criteria. Part of that process will, as has been submitted in the comments, involve the identification, the evaluation, and an effort to address all of those stakeholder concerns and impacts to the extent we reasonably can. That's all I have for you unless you have specific questions. I will be happy to try to answer them.
Any questions for Eric or Steve? If there aren't any, I look to the board for direction. We can take action. We can not take action. The will of the board.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move to authorize the general manager to exercise the district's option to acquire the Henderson properties with the understanding that the acquisition of the property shall not limit the choice of reasonable alternatives where appropriate in any environment review or permitting process for future public use of the property.
Okay, motion has been made. Before we can have any discussion, we need a second.
I second.
So it's been moved and seconded to purchase the Henderson property. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I just have a few comments. as a prior resident to the Chelan Valley for over 16 years, and I still own a home in Manson. It was about 20 years ago that I also participated as a citizen in the underground, overhead citizens group that helped make recommendations to the board at that time on policies. Because this was an issue 20 years ago. And so I feel really empathetic for everyone here with this decision. But I went up to Corky and Robin's house upon their invitation to observe from their vantage point their issues and what they were talking about. I appreciate the invitation and their time. And then we had our meeting in Chelan, and I still wasn't convinced as to which way we needed to go. It just seemed like almost any direction that we went, we were impacting somebody's view, and it was problematic. So I did a little bit of research, and here's just some of the things that I found out that I thought were interesting. And I've heard the issue, and it was mentioned by the attorney tonight, about upcoming developments need to then pick up those expenses. When the Wapato substation was built and the Union Valley substation was built to serve Chelan and the growing Manson area. 44 developments have occurred since that time of those substations were built. And basically, as the developments have come in, one way to look at it is that access to that power was kind of borrowed and spread, and lo and behold, you get to the last guy who builds a house that tips it over the edge, and they're the bad guys, right? And yet, if you took the idea that the first development, big development that went in, should have paid their fair share, interestingly enough, it's right along that blue line that we call it, that we've been looking at, and for 2 years we've been studying this line. And a lot of different options have been looked at and studied, and every one of those has an impact on somewhere, someone, in some way. It's kind of interesting also, I found that at the end of this process, nearing the conclusion, the answer or the options that have come up have been very close to what the original citizens group recommended to look at in the area. Not specific sites, but in the area that it's kind of come full circle. We looked way out and we came back to that line. I've driven I'm familiar with those hills. I used to live in the area, and I've made that trip from Chelan to Manson probably several thousand times, and I've driven up in the hills and tried to figure out the best scenario for us to pull this off. I went down last Thursday or Friday, I can't remember which day it was, and walked around the Henderson property, and I realized that, again, no option is good, but I believe in my mind that this still is the least impactful. And the reason why I say that is because it has the shortest transmission. It's tucked in a low spot, and I truly believe by continuing to work with the neighbors, getting input, things can be mitigated as we look at this property to mitigate the situation and make it the best that we possibly can. So those are my thoughts.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
And I can only speak, you know, for myself as a commissioner, but our highest obligation as a commission is to the full well-being of the district. This is a decision that affects all 48,000 ratepayers in Chelan County. It's been a decision that has long-term implications for the full district. It has been said throughout this process that the PUD has plenty of money. The cost of underground versus overhead lines shouldn't be an issue. At the inception of the recession, and as our financial situation changed, we went into preservation mode. It was easy to be financially disciplined. The wolf was at the door. As we came out of the recession and we did some financial restructuring and hit some good times and hit a nice stride, we began to accumulate a reasonable reserve. It was interesting who came out of the woodwork at that point. we were recognized as deep pockets and the only entity in Chelan County that had a revenue stream. And a lot of entities had a lot of great ideas on how to spend your money, because it is your money. The decision was made at that time to be the most fiscally responsible and disciplined organization that we could be. We're in a different time in terms of power sales and price. As Mr. Wright had said earlier, the natural gas market has changed along with the renewables. The price that we can get on the open market and through contracts for our product, we can't control that end of the industry very well. But the one part of our organization that we can control are our expenditures. And we have chosen, in an uncertain future, a conservative position financially related to our financial well-being. My decision is going to be based on a long-term position, and it's not only financially based. Leaving the house to come here tonight, my wife said that it's been a long 2.5 years. I have listened almost daily to the concerns of the citizens on the North Shore, and I hope in many ways you have felt that, that as a commission we have listened. I think the best long-term decision, although only essentially one group will feel the bite of the lion, and I understand that. And what has occurred, you know, through the process is you end up with two pieces of property with identical competing interest. And that does pit neighbors against neighbors, and I understand that. And that bothers me. It really does. But it wouldn't matter. It hasn't mattered wherever we've selected a piece of property. The competing interest, and particularly the thought of not in my backyard, becomes a prevailing, you know, thought. Again, I understand that, but there can only be one piece of property ultimately selected. And it is regretful that neighbors are having difficulty, and I understand your statement, getting along with each other. I'd like to say thanks to a PUD staff who I think has shared their professional knowledge and expertise. They've conducted themselves professionally, and I'm proud of that. They've taken your questions. They've done the research. They've come back with information. They've come back with alternatives. I know that in several cases, information that you've given me, I've delivered directly to them. And within 7 to 10 days, you have a conversation that I know what you have said and has been relayed, has been responded to. And so, again, I want to say thanks to the staff for that. I appreciate my fellow commissioners and their patience and persistence and their willingness to, I don't know anybody who's done a 2.5 year process. And I appreciate that persistence and patience. To General Manager Steve Wright for keeping us all on task. But mostly I'm appreciative, and you, and just appreciative of the fact that the public has been willing in a very contentious day and age to step forward and represent their community and aspects of the communities through a process. And it's not always easy to do, to have neighbors just up the road or down the road that you're now on the opposite side of the fence of. And a lot of people wouldn't have that courage. And again, I appreciate the people who originally established a committee, the mayor and city council who have provided opportunities for us to meet,
and to move us forward down a path. But in my heart of hearts, again, I don't want to minimize the personal aspect that this carries to each and every one of you. But as a commissioner, my commitment is to long-term thinking and the financial well-being. If we don't have a solvent organization, none of us receive the benefit of the cheapest public power in the United States. And we're in a unique situation. And so you at least have some understanding of where my thought processes have been, and I thank you for being patient and listening to me for the last few minutes. Thank you.
Additional comments?
This process has been extremely difficult for myself and others in this room tonight. There's always been a feeling of, to some extent, urgency. Our prime purpose here is to keep the lights on. That's our job, keep the power on. Knowing that the existing substation that services the North Shore is over 80% of capacity, entering into a winter where I don't know about everybody else's house, but it's pretty darn cold at mine. And we just spent 2 years in a public outreach seeking a new substation location. And that time has allowed the substation to creep ever closer to its tipping point. I'd also like to comment just a little bit about new development. There has been new development in the North Shore area. But I'd also like to point out how many new flat-screen TVs do people have in their homes? When the existing substations were put in, did Wi-Fi exist? Did everybody have a router? Because that's in every home today. All of these electronic devices and the computerization of the world is soaking up more power. That substation isn't just being impacted by new development. It's being impacted by everybody. I have 3 TVs at home. When I was a kid growing up, I had 1. So the demand for power is increasing. As we look at words that Commissioner Boltz had said earlier about fiscal discipline, there was a time when Chelan PUD had $1 billion in debt. And everyone that I talked with said, pay that down. Well, we've been focusing on doing just that. That's that fiscal discipline that Commissioner Boltz talked about. We've also been using cash on hand to pay to rebuild the hydros. Well, that's the golden egg that the goose is laying for all of us that keeps our power rates low. We're in a position that as the markets have rewarded our discipline, to use that cash and rebuild these turbines. Additionally, as you heard from the general manager, Steve Wright, seeking efficiencies and cost savings across the entire PUD complex, looking for ways to keep our costs down, not just today, but into the future, so that we can continue to assure low-cost, efficient power for this community. The critical thinking in this process for myself, as I was looking at what decision might I make going forward, knowing that it would impact someone inevitably, was I had to look at the entire Chelan County rate-paying customer base. And I have to say, are we keeping to our mission of efficient, cost-effective power for the community that benefits the entire community and doesn't just focus on benefiting a certain area? We talked about undergrounding power earlier. the cost of undergrounding power is expensive. And also it's variable. Because once you put a shovel into the dirt, you don't know if you're going to hit sand or you're going to hit rock. All that has an impact on the cost of undergrounding. So we look at our decision, or at least my decision as one commissioner, as what benefits the county rate-paying residents that have entrusted in us the stewardship to maintain and watch over the revenue and Chelan County PUD. I would like to applaud all the individuals involved in our two-year journey, including members of the community that have volunteered, that have put in countless hours in committees and meetings, the mayor, the city council, and Chelan, who have supported us in our search for a location, as well as the PUD staff who have spent many, many hours on this project and have demonstrated extreme patience and tenacity in moving forward. I also like to thank our general manager for keeping all of us focused and encouraged while attempting to find that perfect location. That perfect location where no one's unhappy. That's what we were looking for. Well, that perfect solution did not present itself. As much as we tried for 2 years plus, it did not present itself. I have empathy for those who will be unhappy with my decision this evening. However, I do believe that this allows the PUD to have an opportunity. And that opportunity is to showcase what a modern substation can look like with beautification landscaping and modern motion-detecting LED lights that point down to minimize the light pollution. I look forward to see what we can create that benefits everyone. Thank you.
Want to say anything?
I do. So I've been a commissioner for 14 years, and I've never made a more difficult decision than what I've had to make on this issue. I'm sorry that Corky and Robin left. I wanted to look them in the eye and tell them I understand their frustration. I understand their anger. I think probably Corky and Robin are going to be impacted more than anybody else, and possibly Kathy. So I'm sorry it can't be a win-win situation. Gary said it. We've tried, and, you know, in 14 years, it seems like we've always been able to figure out a way, not us, but our clever staff and our passionate staff, and we do have terrific staff who really care. They've always been able to find a win-win for everybody, and I think when you're siting substations, maybe it's not possible. But everything else has been said. I just want to say I wish it could be different. And I felt responsible. I felt like the responsible person to make the motion, because this is my district. And so that's what I did.
Normally the chair, the presiding officer of a board, is not supposed to enter into discussion, but with permission of my fellow commissioners, I'd like to make a few comments. It's tough following a couple of retired school superintendents that plot out their thoughts well. I have a tendency not to take notes, but to try to listen. And I gain a lot by listening, and I've listened for a couple of years to some people that really, really care about their community up in Chelan. And I respect the dickens out of that. I had a thought today that, you know, we always look for that compromise. We as elected commissioners never want to make a constituent unhappy. We just don't. I mean, that's a reality. And it's tough with the substation. Steve Wright will attest to the fact that about 6 months ago we were having breakfast, and I looked at him and I said, you know, Steve, I think the goal going forward is to develop the invisible substation. And I think that from what I'm hearing on the mitigation measures, maybe we can get a lot closer than people think we can. There's a lot of new technology out there, and I'm optimistic that going forward, I'm hopeful, not necessarily optimistic, but hopeful that when this is all said and done, the addition of a substation doesn't have to denote what it's meant in the past. It can be something, a nice part of the community. Don't know if that's going to be possible or not, but let's give it a try. You know, I grew up in the upper valley of Kashmir. When I was young, there was a good number of my neighbors that didn't even have electricity. And so to watch this evolution over about a 50-year period from not having electricity to really being concerned about how that electricity is delivered is a lesson learned here at the public utility, because, you know, we were a public utility then, we're a public utility now, and we listen to the public, and the public is changing, and we have to respect that, and I do respect that. And so my commitment as the commissioner is going forward on this. Let's see if we can make that maybe not the invisible substation, but the substation that the neighborhood can be proud of and enjoy, because it's not an eyesore. It's a delight to look at. Don't know what that necessarily means yet, but I know we've got a lot of staff members that have put a lot of time into thinking about just how we can do that. So I, too, am sorry that Robin and Corky left, because, you know, I, all of us have been up there, and we visited the site. We've spent time there. We understand the impact. And, we want to make sure that we do the best job we can possibly do. I won't talk about the financial side. Gary covered that, but we're all on that same page. We have a balanced scorecard that we live our commission duties by. And number one, a couple of years ago, the very top item on our balanced scorecard was being a financially responsible utility. We felt that we had done a decent job of handling the financial stress that we were under. And at a board workshop, we flipped number one and number two, if you will, and right now customer satisfaction is at the top of our list. And so those are the top two priorities of this utility or of this commission: customer satisfaction and financial stability. In that order, because our house has been in order, but we know we have to keep it there. So we want to continue to work with the public in every way we can. And hope that you will continue to work with us. Any other comments, commissioners? Are we ready to vote?
Yes.
Yes.
All those in favor of the motion to authorize the general manager to exercise the district's option to acquire the Henderson properties, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Is there any other business to come before the commission? If not, we will stand adjourned.